Good evening, and welcome to the June 2nd regular meeting of the Morro Bay Planning Commission. All of our members are present. The meeting is called to order, and we will start with a moment of silence, please. Okay, would you all rise and join us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Very good. This is the time that's set aside for Planning Commissioner announcements. Are there anything that anyone would like to say? Richard. Go for it.
The Ocean Protection Council is having a draft Prop 1 guidelines for water quality, supply, and infrastructure improvement. And the public comment period is going to be the deadline's August 21st, and there's going to be three public meetings. The locations will be determined if you get on the OPC website or the Bond Accountability website at the Resources California Government website. Also, you could go to the OPC meeting in Sacramento, and then you could have a public comment there, and that'll be on July 29th, 2014 in Sacramento.
I'm sorry, July 29th?
July 29th in Sacramento.
Okay. Any other announcements this evening? No. Okay. Very good. So we will move on then to public comment. This is a time that's set aside for general public comment on any issues that are not before the Planning Commission tonight. So if there's anyone who has thoughts that you'd like to share with us, please come on up, give us your name, and let us hear from you. Okay. Seeing none, then we will move on to our consent calendar. Consent calendar tonight consists of approval of the minutes from the meeting of March 3rd and March 17th of this year, as well as the current and advanced planning processing list. Does anyone have comments or corrections? Or Catherine?
I have a correction on the March 17th meeting. I was not present, and I am shown as being present.
Very good. Any comments on the planning calendar, Scott?
No, just receiving file.
Thank you. So then do we have a motion to approve the consent calendar as submitted with the correction noted?
Move to approve.
Second.
I'll second.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, motion carries 5-0. Very good. So we have no public hearings this evening, no unfinished business. We do have old business, which is the review of the continuing review of the interim design guidelines for residential development, and I believe Scott's going to speak on that.
Thank you, Chair Taft, members of the Commission. You have before you this evening the interim design guidelines. We last reviewed these on May 19th, where the Planning Commission directed changes to sections J4, 5, and 6. And where the commission directed staff to take a look at adding back in hillside design standards and then adding a new section for solar access. Those sections have been included in the in your packet as sections K and L of the design guidelines. I also was able to complete the breakdown of the comments received at the May 16th, 2015 workshop. There's an exhibit in your and the staff report exhibit 2 that's reflective of those changes, and I have a couple of slides related to comments that were received from the workshop. I broke the comments down into four sections. Section A was items that are already covered by the guidelines, the current language in the guidelines, items that are not currently covered within the guidelines, and then critiques of current guideline policy language, and then finally comments that are proposed changes to the specific policies. I'm going to start with items that are not currently covered by the guidelines because, again, Section A is things that we already have addressed. So Section B, things that are not in the guidelines, floor area ratio. We've had numerous discussions about floor area ratios and the reason why those are not in the guidelines. Again, that's more of an issue related to like a development standard, like a setback. That'd be something that would be more appropriately, if the city were to pursue it, placed in the city's zoning code. Again, now, and then view blockage and preservation. We don't really have too many policies in there that relate to that other than as it relates to vegetation and plantings for homes. View sharing, again, same thing. Comment related to respect, neighbor access to light, privacy, and air. We do have a privacy policy in there that talks a little bit about privacy issues as you relate to development that's adjacent to one another and maybe placement of windows and things like that. And then light, that would be the solar access component. We have some policies now that are in there, the new solar access policies that you haven't taken a look at yet. Comments related to private property rights should not trump neighbor access to light, air, and views. Respect view corridors. Cohesive design by neighborhood, including size, bulk, and scale by neighborhood. Look at hillside, flat, and very small lots. That would be probably an effort that may come out of, I think, the general plan and LCP update. That's a more comprehensive look at design guidelines. That's neighborhood by neighborhood. We've also had conversations about that. And I think probably more, you know, appropriately placed in the context of that general plan and LCP update. And then one, this is probably the first time this has come up related to the design guidelines. You know, there was a discussion about rooftop decks. That should not look over into neighboring properties. And so I don't think we've talked much about that. There was some language related to critiquing of the current guideline language. And then what you see in the list is to relax building materials section, reduce specificity in garage and the driveway section. We did some of that with the language changes, reducing that the specificity a little bit. Compatibility is opposite of diversity and creativity. Another one related to the garage section should be reworked and loosened. The guidelines are overly general. The guidelines have no teeth. Remove guidelines sections F and D4. Add incentives. Enforce existing rules. Guideline C, surface articulation, is too detailed and infringes on personal choice. City should not favor larger homes. And lastly, guidelines should not be too detailed. That kind of runs the gamut of we're too strict, we're not strict enough. Again, I think maybe we're in the sweet spot if you take a look at the comments that we received. Maybe we're kind of down the middle somewhere. At least that's my opinion. So workshop comments related to specific policy and providing guidance there. And guideline A, which is relationship to homes in the immediate neighborhood, comments were expand the immediate area to be served, but to be several blocks, I'm sorry, minimum of 3 blocks in all directions. You'll recall that our current standard is the 300-foot radius that we utilize for mailing labels, although we're changing that. We'll talk a little bit more about that later on. Define architectural integrity. Current language does not promote compatible innovation. Eliminate Section A4. Privacy is individual choice. Guideline Section H, which is additions to existing homes. For H2, remove seamlessly. There was concern about subjectivity. I think guidelines in general are subjective. How are disputes between the city and the applicants resolved? I think the answer to that is probably right in front of this body here. guideline I, privacy, minimize privacy intrusions on adjacent residences, and we do have some language that talks about that. Mm-hmm. It says it's mostly okay, but balconies should not extend into setbacks. We do have the ability in our code to extend cantilever balconies into setbacks. And then landscaping, comments related to landscaping, and that the policies are good, but the trees should not be pruned to be maintained views, but instead planting locations should be chosen that are more appropriate. So that was kind of the commentary that we received, the kind of the condensed version of it. Those were basically verbatim. I didn't really edit any of them. I just took them and put them in the format so you could see them and then kind of categorized them so you could see where they applied. That was much of the input that came out of the workshop. Okay, so now to start the guidelines, I told you I would put all of the guidelines into PowerPoint. Okay. Yes?
Excuse me, can I make a comment, Scott? It seemed like, at the workshop, there was a couple more comments regarding the infringement on property rights of the guidelines and the reduction on, bulk and scale. And I didn't notice those comments, right? I didn't see if those were highlighted in your presentation.
That's a good point. And those were comments that were given verbally at the meeting.
Right.
As you saw, most of the time I was walking around talking to folks, so I didn't have an opportunity to take many notes as a result of it. So what that list was condensed of the written comments that I received. Hmm. And they were basically all of the written comments that I received.
When we stood up, or when one group stood up at the table, their whole comment on it was, excuse me, fighting off a cold, that this was more of a, that they were worried that this was a restriction on property rights, and they wanted to see that. I'd just like to see that point of view included in the overview, just for fairness.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay, so when last we met, I told you I would put all of the guidelines into the PowerPoint presentation. So that's what I've done. There's probably 40 slides, maybe more. So we can go through it policy by policy, and I'd like to kind of do it how you'd like to see it, maybe. I mean, I'm pretty sure you probably don't want me to read all of it to you since you've seen it several times, but I will if you want. I'm game. But if you want to, just have general comments about it, I have the entirety of the language for each section in here. So you can see it here. It's going back to this. I do have a question about the policy A as it relates to the neighborhood area. You know, we talked about at the end of the meeting, at the last Planning Commission meeting, about expanding the notification area from 300 to 500 feet radius. Would you like me also to expand this to 500 feet for the neighborhood? Or do you think 300 is sufficient?
We do have a section in here where we say the immediate adjacent properties have a higher credibility for discussion than the ones that are farther away, no matter what we have, so that we can't cherry pick things from 2.5 blocks away when the 5 properties adjacent to us have a different characteristic. So if we did expand it, we still have coverage that the immediate, more perceptible relationships take precedent over the larger area.
I completely agree.
Okay.
And I still think, like we talked, and there were several comments, before, as we've had some neighborhoods stop at their property's edge, and some neighborhoods would probably continue for 1,000 feet. So I think it's hard to say on a general. I think the 300 feet is the noticing. I think with the larger signs for the development, like you suggested and stuff, I think that gives it more notification than what we have now. And so I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem with the 300 feet.
Okay.
Yeah, my feeling on that is just a practical one. I think if you start going bigger and bigger, it's going to be more and more frequent that you run into situations where you have to modify it. In other words, where there's some part of that 500 foot area that is not applicable. On the other hand, if it's a very homogeneous area where you wouldn't have to modify it, it doesn't really matter, because what's in the 300-foot radius and what's in the 500-foot radius are going to be very similar. So I'm okay with sticking with the 300 feet. On that issue, Scott, I did have there's a sentence. It's not actually in one of the guidelines. It's in the text below item number 4, where it says, and this is just really a clarification, it says there are factors where the diagram might not be applicable, including but not limited to. To me, that's a clumsy sentence. It's after point 4 in the single family, in the design, in the relationship to homes in the immediate neighborhood.
After 4, okay.
I just have some wording that I think here's the wording I would suggest. In some situations, factors may be present which require a definition of the immediate neighborhood that differs from that shown in the diagram. Examples include, but are not limited to, da 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 da. To me, it's just nicer English.
And so that was
at the bottom of.
So there are factors sentence. Is that what we were talking about?
Right. I think there's a better wording for that sentence. And I can, if there's no objections, I can give you that word, the wording I just read. I have it written down here.
If everybody's comfortable with that, I'm happy to take it.
Repeat that, please.
In some situations, factors may be present which require a definition of the immediate neighborhood that differs from that shown in the diagram. Examples include, but are not limited to.
Yeah, I'm happy with that.
I'm fine.
Are we going to accept public comment, or is it already?
We're kind of getting into discussion, aren't we? Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's decide then. Let's just decide how we want to approach it. Do we want to go point by point? I think we've all read it, and maybe we can go through it without necessarily reading it. Go through it section by section, and everybody give their comments. Does that work? So then,
do you want to give public comment opportunities after each section?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
With that, then, are there any questions for staff at this point? We kind of got okay. out of order here. So what I would like to do at this point then is just open this up for general public comment. Anyone who'd like to make a remark at this point, please do so. We will, as we go through each section, since really the one of the major purposes of the meeting tonight is to get more public comment, we will be opening it up. I think it's kind of an unusual procedure, but we'll be opening it up several more times. So anyone who'd like to comment now, please feel free to do so. Come forward, let us know who you are, and say what you'd like to say. No, sir. You may comment on anything you would like to at this point.
I was going to wait till you get to landscape.
Whichever you choose. We could, we can take your landscape sort of towards the end. We'd be happy to take your comment now, or we'd be happy to take it at that point, whichever you prefer. Oh yes, there's considerable changes that have been made. They were posted on the website. I don't know if you had a chance to look at them there.
We had changes that were before when we discussed the design guidelines at the last meeting. There were changes
right
then, and then additional changes were directed by the commission at the last meeting, and those will be presented tonight, including the addition of the two new sections and the revisions that we made to
Several sections. Several places.
Yeah, so there's been two rounds of changes since the workshop.
Right.
This is the second one.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
So anyone who'd like to comment at this point, please, we'd love to hear from you.
Good evening, members of the committee, and Mr. Chairman, and Scott. Good evening to you. My name is Robert Krause, and I have a few thoughts and concerns about the guidelines dealing with landscape. That's guideline J, landscape. And overall, I think it's great policy that you're coming out with some guidelines for people to follow. But as you know, because people always don't do the right thing, it's nice that if they can see something in front of them that would kind of push them that direction. And I think with landscaping and home improvement, that would be really important. My question would be, how do they get this in their hands so that they see these things? And if we really don't have a requirement for a landscaping plan, then chances are, if somebody's going to do a remodel, are they going to be able to get a guideline so they can see if they're going to do some landscaping, what the recommendations are? But regardless, I know I'm not here to ask you questions. I'm a really good example. My wife and I are landscaping gone bad. And this is a situation where I've been involved in a 4-year litigation over a neighbor who didn't have a concern for what was going on around him. He was only concerned about taking on a 50 by 100-foot lot and building a fortress. And even though it violated ordinances that were city ordinances, the city wouldn't seem to bite into it. They wouldn't enforce their ordinance. So that left me on the hook to take them to court. It's pretty bad when you have a neighbor who comes in and puts a cloud and a shadow over your house. And that's by just growing trees on the south side, west side, or east side, it's pretty bad. The other thing that I have a problem with that I see going on around Morro Bay are individuals who are planting, for example, on Bradley Street. Somebody just cut down a major tree that was there. You've probably noticed if you've driven up Bradley. Well, what's gone in its place are 3-star pines. And you know how big a star pine can get. Now, is this person thinking of the neighbor to his east? Because that's exactly the people that are going to be affected by this. Not him. It's on the east side of his property. He looks west. Gorgeous view. The other people are now going to be completely shadowed. So that's my concern about that. I think some of the additional recommendations that I would add to the plan, and I know you don't want detail and you don't want to be specific, but I think that trees should not be planted in setback areas of zone districts. So if I'm on an R1 zone and my setback is 10 feet from the back, somebody shouldn't be planting a tree within that area, especially a tree that's going to grow 30, 40 feet tall. Part of the reason is not the fact that they can't do it. It's that they're going to burden me with cleaning up their tree because they're going to plant it so close, and if it has a 30-foot span, that means I'm going to get 15 feet of responsibility. I don't think it's fair. And right now, the policy seems to be laissez-faire. So I would like to see that change. The radius of the tree at maturity should be used to determine the planting distance from the boundary. Plants, bushes, and shrubs that are planted within setback areas of the zone district should comply with the fence and screening codes. I'm somewhat confused about heights of zoning districts. I know on where I live, R1, 50 by 100 foot, when you talk about that the tree shouldn't be any higher than the height limit on that particular lot, let's say it's 25 feet. If that's a slope lot, does a tree get to be 25 feet in the front of the tallest part of the lot or the lower part of the lot? Or does it, are we talking about a horizontal plane? Oops. You want me to sit down? I can't. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I only have a couple more items. So that's a question. The city of the you also mentioned in that particular section, you're talking about the city, if you're planning in the front of your house or in the city, I guess it's a city area, and they recommend certain trees. Well, you know, the city has a list of trees, and that's 17 of them, as I counted. 11 of those trees are taller than the zoning district allows. They grow, I'm talking about 30 to 60 feet. So if my zoning is 25 feet, I got 11 of them that don't comply. Again, I talked about the landscape plan. I think that's very important. And that the city ordinances need to support all landscaping guidelines in some way. I'm also the gentleman who sent you a copy of the Laguna Beach Preservation and Restoration Plan. I think it has some good things to offer. And you know, I don't think that you can just talk about building and view preservation and consideration for neighbors when you're building and mass and scale without considering trees. They're there. They last a heck of a long time. And they sure do a fine job of blocking. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else who'd like to comment at this point? Okay, seeing none, we'll bring it back to the commission. Do you want to comment on any of the things that Mr. Krause brought up? Or
well, he is correct. We have trees on the city street tree list that that would exceed the zone, the height in the zone districts. That's correct. Those are street trees are city trees. You're probably going to have some that are taller. The ones we're talking about are really the ones that are going to be, you know, that are proposed to be planted in association with the development, probably exclusive of street trees. I have had some conversation with Public Works about that. And we have a list of street trees, and apparently there's the ability to, you know, to deviate somewhat from that list. And I've gotten a lot of input from that side of things related to whether there's whether we could maybe change some of the policy to be more reflective of something like this. I haven't gone down that road yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I do recognize that this list, the street tree list, does include trees that would exceed the height in the zone district.
So at some point that could be revised, I suppose. I
would think we would probably want to take a look at that if we eventually end up adopting this and that those policies remain in there, then yes, I think we should probably go down that road to be consistent. I mean, something that we probably need to take a look at.
So I suppose potentially it could even say these street trees are approved in R1, these street trees are approved in C1, whatever. You know, could be zone specific, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, what you're getting is, I mean, you're required to have one street tree, so you're going to have, potentially you have one tall tree that could be on a lot, I guess, at this point.
And then in terms of the allowable building height on sloped lots, I believe that's above average natural grade, right?
Yeah, we're locking it into how you measure height for the home. So
right.
Yeah, I mean, we're trying not to make it too complicated. Like, hey,
right.
Your house can be X tall. If that tree is exceeding it, and we've added that as a condition to your project or something, then you need to maintain it at a height below that. I mean, it's at least thankfully from the language that we have, it's fairly straightforward to, you know, to take a look at and enforce.
Okay. So then, any other comments at this point?
I appreciate the comments. That's one of the reasons I was advocating we have the height limitations in there, and I do think it's on a property by property basis, it can be devastating what you do in that setback limit. I can't build a house there, but I can put a tree there. Mm-hmm. I think there are some good points there. The concern I have is where do you start triggering something to be reviewed, and where does it start to become an obligation? So I don't know where that is. I don't know if the intent of the homeowner is to plant anything that's larger. What's our 6-foot perimeter height of fencing except for the front yard? If you have something over 6 feet, does it trigger a landscape plan? Because we don't care what you do below 6 feet. But if anything is above 6 feet, you've talked about the heights of the fencing, and then all of a sudden you're into the between the height of the fencing and the top of the buildable area limit on the lot. And that can be the part that all of a sudden, boom, that's where you start taking away, you know, what someone could assume should be a view shed. There's no obligation to protecting view sheds, but if someone can, by assumption, assume the city is not going to allow someone to build in a setback, one can make an assumption that that should be protected as an area for possible views.
I mean, that's certainly a valid point. The problem that you run into is, and Mr. Krause pointed it out, is you're not required to have a landscape plan. And so that's the sort of deficiency here. We're saying, hey, you know, when you're looking at it and you're bringing stuff forward to us, and if you're showing landscaping, then you should adhere to these policies. And we sort of had to tailor it to read that way because we don't have a requirement in most areas unless you're going through the, like, precise plan process or PD process to have a landscape plan.
Yeah, but it seems to me, though, that we're getting a little far afield here because what we're talking about is residential design guidelines. In terms of trees and views, the vast majority of what's going to get planted is not what's planted at the time that the house is built. You know, things die, people plant new stuff. I just don't see any real, and therefore, the majority of the problem is going to be not before us. We're never going to be aware of it. You know, it seems to me that, and that's number one. And number two, the council has specifically told us don't deal with view protection at this time. So it seems to me that at some point we may have to revisit this. If this is a community interest, we may have to revisit this in a very different format than what we're putting together here.
Mr. Krause, it saddens me that you had to go to court over this issue. It's never a good thing, you know. But and I do understand. Like, I think what you mentioned, the radius of the canopy that we're dealing with, that's something that it's kind of difficult to kind of regulate, especially if we don't even have ordinance to do that. So I kind of like the way it's written right now with the overview. And once again, this is a living document. And so as this gets implemented, I hope that we'll at least bring it to the forefront of people to think about others when they do these planting and these other landscaping plans. And I don't really have an answer other than just try to think about, for people when they're planting, to think about, like, when it matures, when the tree matures and stuff like that. And one of the things that I kind of bring up, it's like people think about the canopy, but I as a collection worker who was on call 24/7, a big problem too is making sure that your root problems and your laterals and your root problems and sewer mains, and we talk about different, like, Myriporum is like a nightmare for collection workers when it gets in there, you know. And so these are some of the things that asking around and talking to people from different facets can help educating oneself to do that.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for your comments. I believe that we should at least consider adding the phrase "trees should not be planted in the setback area" if that's possible. I think you know, if we're not letting people build in the setback area, it makes all the sense in the world to include that into the landscaping plan at this point in time.
We're officially designated as a tree city. I find this kind of ironic at this point, especially, you know, like I'd mentioned before, you know, you used to drive by North Morro Bay and you couldn't see the homes for the trees that were up there. You know, in the 50s, the Boy Scouts threw largesse from the state park. When the state park manager ordered twice as many trees as he needed and then received a double order on top of that, he didn't know what to do with it. So he had the Boy Scouts plant the Monterey pines around the city. And we enjoyed those for years until the beetle came in. So, you know, I miss those trees. They did block some views, but they provided habitat. They provided, you know, buffering. They reduced they took up CO emissions. A tree planted in an urban environment is 10 times more effective than in an arboreal forest, you know, in moderating climate change. And if you do not want to have trees in setbacks in small lots, there's no other place to put them. You can't. There just is no, you know, feasibly, they either go in the setback or they go in somebody's living room, you know, on small lots. It's just, you know, so I have a problem I admit, you know, that there are problem trees, but not every tree is a problem. And so I would not like to see more restrictions.
Well, what we have now with regard to trees in view is the requirement for siting of trees to avoid unnecessarily obstructing views from adjacent properties. That's the general statement. The whole thing about the height not being higher than the building height is kind of a substatement under that. So, I mean, there are areas where there are parts of Morro Bay that actually don't have a view. You know what I'm saying? And so, I hate to put in something so broad in a document that is as general as this one is. In other words, that may be very appropriate for certain areas of town, but I would like to have a document that identifies where those areas are rather than kind of making a blanket statement.
And I still think that it would be great if we could have landscape plans come before us, you know, with the projects, you know, and have that as a listed item on submittals. So, you know, for anything that requires a variance or requires a CUP, I think that's a viable requirement, you know, to have landscape plan, you know, included.
Would we be open to a statement about avoid trees which extend their drip lines over the property lines to other people's property?
That's, you know, on the larger lots, I can see that. But on a smaller lot, you know, once again, it's, you know, we have a myporium that drops purple berries and blackbirds all over our lot, all over our house. But, you know, I'm not about to cut it down. It's right on the property line, you know, so, you know, I don't know.
I think there's going to be a lot of personal preference involved here. I think you know, one neighbor might say, I don't want all that stuff falling in my yard. And the next neighbor might say, oh, what a great tree. I love it. You know, I think this is a situation where it's hard to be black and white, you know, because different people have different preferences.
You have a couple of issues creating blanket statements like that because you're required to have a street tree. So that's in a setback, regardless of where you put it. It's going to be in the front. It could be in the right-of-way, but it very likely might be in the front setback. So right there, you have a problem with it, with just that blanket statement. You know, not having it in a side yard setback or something like that is probably something you could consider if that was what you wanted to do. But I don't think just blanket not in a setback is going to work because you're required to have street trees.
I think it's an issue that we have to have. It's an issue that if we try to deal with it in general, we're going to muck it up. You know, I think it's going to have to be, if this is to be dealt with, I think it's going to have to be dealt with in a much more specific way. In terms of both the view protection and the mess, you know, the mess issue. I mean, There's a lot of options. We'd say if the neighbor signs a statement agreeing to the fact that they don't mind having the, or something to that effect. You know, I don't know, but I don't think it's going to happen in these guidelines. I really don't.
Trees change.
Yeah.
Scott, some of this maybe like not right now, but as we develop the general plan and the LCP, maybe we could lace in the future. If we get a landscape ordinance or whatever, there may be something like that by when we kind of addressing it neighborhood by neighborhood, like we're doing the other issues. Maybe that would be something that we could lace it in there. Or
well, I think that very well may be what happens down the road. I think it's kind of odd that we don't have a landscaping ordinance. It seems strange to me that we don't have policies to follow when you're putting in landscaping at all. That's not how most cities do it. In fact, we're required to have a landscaping ordinance. We don't have one, and so the state provided one that we're required to follow. But they're for larger projects, okay? They're for larger commercial projects and things like that, and there are requirements that go along with it. There are minimum standards that we're required to adhere to. You just don't usually see projects of that size. You know, we're usually dealing with remodels and additions on single-family homes, and so they don't meet that criteria. But it does make sense that the city have something, you know, and I'm sure that would be something that at least is discussed when we go through the GP, general plan and LCP update process. And then it comes back into that neighborhood, you know, guideline commentary that we've been having. Like, it probably makes sense to tailor these more by neighborhood because you're going to have areas where a lot of the view corridors based on lot orientation are down sides between houses and things. And those are probably definable by neighborhood view corridors that we would want to protect. If you're going to protect views, I mean, they would be at least recognizing those things and saying, hey, it's just like if you had oceanfront lots and you had views between those homes that were on the oceanfront out to the ocean, that you would keep those view corridors open so you can see out there. So it could be something along those lines, but I think it'll probably, you know, come forth as part of that effort for the general plan and LCP update. At least the discussion will. I don't think it's going away. So.
Okay, so then why don't we go start with our section-by-section review. Maybe it would be useful for the public that is watching as we go through each one of the sections if you would just note what the new text is.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fine. I mean, so the first section is Section A and its relationship to homes in the immediate neighborhood. And so that's relating to the design of a proposed house or addition. I don't think we don't have any changes in Section A.
I guess I want to ask about the logic of 300 versus 500. If we're noticing 500 because we thought there was a inherent neighborhood issue involved, why wouldn't we extend it to 300 to 500?
Well, that's why I asked the question. The whole point behind that was to, you know, you constantly get commentary, well, we're not letting people know, people aren't you know, finding out. To that end, we had an item on the agenda at last meeting where we talked about bigger signs. In fact, I've ordered 20 of them today. And I changed our postcards because, they're on white background and they're a little postcard. They're a postcard like this, and I think people would just throw them away a lot of times. And so our signs are going to be yellow, and so now our postcards are yellow too. So I have made some changes there, so hopefully people, will see them. They're sort of obnoxiously yellow on purpose. I don't know what to do beyond that. I mean, you can't make them flash in the mail, so I wasn't able to come up with something for that. But at least I can make them bright, so you can say, hey, maybe that's something that's worthwhile taking a look at. And then we're going to be, doing the radius larger for the notification. I think the commentary in the language is kind of how Chairperson Teft indicated, is it says, hey, you should look at these areas in general, but maybe it's more important to look at where it's right adjacent to you, depending on where you're at. And the language, we've tweaked the language in there quite a bit to sort of pick those types of nuances up. So I think we're doing a pretty good job. It's not difficult to increase the size of the radius if you want to, though. It's just a map. But I think 300 does pick up mostly what we're looking at and is usually what we're paying most closest attention to. At least it is when I go out and look at a project. I don't know how it is when you guys go out and look at it, but that's what I do when I go. I'm looking at that street behind it maybe, street on the other side, street behind that, and then several houses up and down the block in that direction. That's usually within 300-foot radius. I don't usually extend too much out beyond that. You'll see applicants do that when they're trying to find things that are bigger, though. So,
and you would have the option if you looked at a situation, you said, the mix of houses in this area is just so diverse that I really think we need to get a bigger sample. You could do that using the that clause that we discussed previously.
And there's also situations where your neighborhood may be one side of the street linearly, for 6 or 8 blocks, and that's pretty much your neighborhood, depend by topography.
So the area might need to go 20 feet in one direction and 500 feet the other way. That's just the reality of it, It may even be commercial on the other side of the street or some totally different zone.
Yeah.
If the diagram is 50-foot lots, we're only talking to going to the edge of the diagram on the top, I believe. Maybe a little past.
Yeah, maybe a little
into
past.
Into the rear yard of the house past the block at the top of the sheet. I'm just concerned that why would we talk about 500 foot versus 300 feet instead of just making it 300? These things are all pretty easy to see. If you see a subdivision edge, it shows up in the parcel plan size. And if we get to the places where we do have large lots or we do have a large project on a particularly differentiated site, most of the places in town, 300 is probably okay, but the place that it wouldn't be is the larger lots. So, and that's where we have some of our largest problems, potentially. I would just rather see continuity in the notification, not the architecture.
Richard, do you have any thoughts on this? We haven't heard.
I'll be honest with you. I'm okay with the 300 feet because it kind of matches with the language we're talking about, giving it more credence as you get near. That's all I got to say about that.
I actually like it being consistent with, it's, you have to remember 500 and then you have to remember 300. To me, it's just a lot easier. Just do 500, make it consistent.
I don't really have a preference either way. 300, I think it's more critical to hit a naturally occurring boundary, you know, then and be consistent rather than go 500 feet. So you got to, if you go 500 feet, you got a 1,000-foot, you know, diameter. You know, you're talking, you know, what's that? That's roughly a square mile, thereabouts. You know, so I think it's more. I think you can. It's, you know, you'll be able to see the neighborhood, you know, as you walk it, as you Google it, as you see the subdivision maps, you know. So I think I don't have a problem either way.
I kind of agree. It's, you know, if some of the members feel more comfortable with 500, I would be equally comfortable with 500. I just hope that the planning department will liberally apply its discretion to modify the shape of the neighborhood when it's necessary.
That's why your staff's here.
So, do we kind of all feel like we'd be okay with 500?
Yeah.
No, okay. Are there any other issues with A that anyone has run across? Okay, so we'll move on to B, which is scale and mass.
So scale and mass, this was the item that we changed at the last meeting. Commissioner Teft brought language forward for a change to this. I have both the proposed language, and I think we had mostly agreement on the part of the commission for this. And then I also have the stricken language if you want to see what was there before. I can read it to you if you want. The proposed new construction or remodeling projects should be consistent with the overall pattern of perceived scale and mass in the surrounding neighborhood. Compatibility cannot be achieved merely by demonstrating that other selected residences nearby may be similar in size or larger than the proposed project, particularly if the selected examples are atypical of the neighborhood or at a distance from the proposed project. The apparent size, scale, and mass of a proposed project can be affected by thoughtful design, appropriate siting on the lot, landscaping, and other factors, as well as by the actual size of the residences.
I think that should be singular, residence.
Residence,
yeah. So any issues that you'd like to bring up that you'd sort of like to kick us off on in Section B, Scott, or you're just going to let us have at it?
I mean, that was the change that we made. Again, these are, I mean, we've talked about these several times now at this point. I don't know, you know, that opening scale and mass paragraph has been one that we've been kicking around and, you know, looking at changes at for a while, but the rest of it, I think, is... Well, we've had some changes to that as well in the past, but not much recently, I don't think.
So then should we maybe then open up for a public comment on either A or B, whichever one people would like to speak about?
That's probably a good way to do it.
So we'll do that. We'll open it up for public comment on either one of these sections, and if anyone has anything they'd like to say. Okay. Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the commission. Okay. Comments?
You know, the only thing I saw that's kind of problematic, because I think it's really hard to achieve, is the perceived scale and mass of a proposed addition to an existing, this is number two, should be of similar form and shape as those of the original home. And I wasn't sure about that. Form and shape, or that means you're not going to be able to have contrast. And I think it's probably okay as long as it's the least conservative viewing of it is what the interpretation would be. Because if we're going to two-story houses, we really can't keep the same shape. It's different. So I'm concerned about what that implies necessarily. I think when we say we'd prefer the upper floors away from the front of the house, I think that starts to help. But I don't think you can make a second-story addition necessarily the same shape or form as the first floor. Now, if you want to talk about style, which I don't want to talk about because I don't like the S word, but then that's different. But that's just my... That's the only thing I picked up here that really struck me as odd. I think 3D increase the front and or side backs for the entire structure under... I don't know. I have a question on that one. But I'm not worried about that one like I'm worried about number 2. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that we need to tell you the truth. I think 3 starts to do a pretty good job.
Well, isn't 2 really just saying that when a house, I think, no, yeah. I think that we added, when we made the change to the text in 1, we added remodeled homes, remodeling projects in with 1. So it seems that it seemed that 2, that 1 was applying to new construction and 2 sort of extended the concept to remodeling. But maybe you're right. Maybe we don't need 2 anymore since number 1 talks about remodeled as well.
I was comfortable with what's in number 1.
I think the overall issue that it's maybe meant to address is probably an issue that's addressed by other policies in the same section. So, you know, that I would say one of the problems that we see when things come in and we have additions and you sort of get this discordant look to the addition. The idea is that we're sort of trying to avoid that discordant look and to have something in writing that says that. That's the thing we're trying to solve. You do have other language in here that sort of references that a little bit, so we're probably okay if you want to remove it.
Or maybe you could just say should be appropriate to the original home. The perceived scale and mass of a proposed addition to an existing residence should be appropriate to the original home.
I guess that depends on if you change the architectural style of your home. If you go from one style and then you decide you're going to do the addition and you're going to kind of take it in a different direction, the overall style of the house could change as a result of that, I suppose. I mean, just thinking of what problem that would create.
Or should be consistent with the original home?
Maybe appropriate to? Was that the?
That was the first one.
I like consistent with.
Yeah.
I actually don't have a problem with it either staying in as it is or changing to consistent or removing it. I think we have talked about the whole scale and mass in other areas. Yeah. So just a reiteration of it.
I think what Scott's saying is he's trying to get a little bit to design here. So maybe you could say the perceived scale, mass, and design of a proposed addition should be consistent with the original or appropriate to the original home or consistent with, whichever. Yeah.
But then you still get into additions that could be, you know, a counterpoint to the existing.
Then appropriate too would be better than consistent with.
Yeah. So we're trying to stay. Yeah. If you're looking for good design, you can have a counterpoint as a good design theme. So.
I mean, the thing we're really trying to address is the things that aren't good designs, and I get a few of those.
Right.
Or ones at least that make me scratch my head.
Yeah.
So let's just run this by everybody and see if we can agree on the perceived scale, mass, and design of a proposed addition to an existing residence should be appropriate to the original home. And appropriate to could mean a counterbalance, could mean something.
We might be limiting people. What if you start off with not such a good design and then you're doing that? And you're trying to make a better design, you know? Okay. For me, it could come out because I think it's addressed in number three, but I think that we should leave people freedom to, you know, change their homes if they want, you know. But I think that I guess appropriate design is okay.
I think Scott's just asking for a place to hang his hat in some of these discussions.
I can live with appropriate. It's conveniently ambiguous.
Okay.
Yeah. And once again, we're going to review these with 3 months, 6 months, and a year.
We're going to do what?
Perhaps 6 months.
I think 6 months might be, once we start the general plan updates and all the other stuff I'm working on.
Well, and don't forget, council is probably going to chew up everything over there anyway. So
yeah, I probably still have 6 months left doing this. So do you want to go, so it was the perceived scale, mass, and design should be appropriate to the
original home.
The original home, okay. Does that see, everybody, am I seeing heads nodding? That seems to work? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
So let's then go on to C, surface articulation. I'm sorry.
No.
There were more.
I just want to go back to the first... our preamble to this section, and I know we hammered out this language on the last one, but I just want to reiterate that, I don't want this to be, I don't want this to be punitive or to reduce the ability of, I'll just leave it at that. I just want to make sure that this is not done in a punitive manner, as far as a reaction to some of the really poorly designed houses that have caused neighborhood, rift here. We still have to respect people's ability, why they bought certain lots and their understanding when they bought those lots, what they could do on those lots. So I guess I'm okay with the language, but I just want to make sure the intent's clear on this.
Any other comments on A or B? Then we will move on to C. Okay. C is surface articulation.
I don't think I had
I don't any, think there have been any changes. To
I don't
this
think
section.
I had any changes here.
Which doesn't mean we won't have something to say necessarily.
True.
I was kind of going to go like every two sections we'll do public comment.
Yeah, I'm fine with C.
Okay. I don't think you're getting a lot of
uproar here.
Well, I mean, you guys have looked at this several times, so
yeah.
I'm not.
Yeah.
It's not surprising.
Okay.
Okay, so E.
We'll move on to D, which is garages, I believe, if I can find it here.
This is building, D is building orientation.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
Okay.
Building orientation.
I don't think we had changes there either.
Nope.
There's no changes from the last meeting.
Any comments on D?
My only comment on D, I think I made last time, is the two diagrams to me are just based on looking at a plan. And there could be some really good reasons why we wouldn't base it just on the plan, that the where the house is on the site might be... those two diagrams, because, you know, it could be that by doing that you're actually trying to retain a benefit for a neighbor or something like that. It could be that there's some other reason to do that. So I'm less concerned about, I think especially the front yard situation actually seems better sometimes in the smaller lot neighborhoods if the front is as tight as it can be. It's like the more urban the front, I think the stronger the streets feel sometimes in the small lots. So this to me don't have as much impact except as the final default after you consider a lot of other things. You shouldn't be doing those things arbitrarily, I guess. You know, I wouldn't come in and automatically say, oh, we want a really big front yard and put the house all the way back at the end of the rear lot line like your top diagram did there. But
we do have that sort of exception to the averaging thing that kind of picks up where you would have different or better designs, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm. I think that probably covers it. It's just, it always looks to me odd when I see something in plan, because I don't think that way as a designer. It's always what's around you and what are you reacting to. You know, where's the sun, where's the view, where's the wind are always more important than throwing something on the plan. So this is a weak argument.
I will tell you that is not always the case with things that come in.
I can tell you from looking here for several years, that's not the case.
But let me ask a general question, Scott. These are guidelines, mm-hmm. right? So, and it's my impression, and correct me if I'm wrong. My impression is that if you're a thoughtful architect, and I'm looking at Michael. And you have a good reason for not wanting to abide by some of the suggestions that are in here, that person can come to you and say, look, I know it says X here, but here's why Y works better and is more appropriate to the neighborhood and is more compatible with the neighborhood than what's written in the guidelines. Is that not the case?
That's absolutely the case.
Yeah.
That's exactly how I view these and how staff views them. I mean, not just me, but the planners view it the same way. It's a tool, and it's a tool to deal with, there's the 80% it picks up, and then there's the 20% that doesn't necessarily fit in there. And those are the ones where we get the architect that comes forward and, hey, we're doing something different, and that makes a lot of sense a lot of times. And it could be for many different reasons. It can be because there's environmentally sensitive habitat next to it, or it's on a steep slope, or what have you. I mean, there's many different reasons why they might want something that doesn't fit into here. I mean, and I fully recognize that, and I think the commission has throughout this process recognized that it's not a one size fits all thing.
And if it's something that's very naughty with the K, you know, you could say, let's take it to the Planning Commission and see what their take on it is. Yeah, so. There is some flexibility to deal with those kind of things. So if there's no other comments from the commission on C and D, I'm going to open it up to the public again. Anyone who would like to come forward and give us input on
on either lot placement or siting and surface articulation, this would be a good time. Okay. So we'll bring it back again and move on to E, which is garage placement and driveway design.
Okay, and so we do have some additional language changes here. I think these were also from Chairperson Teft at the last meeting, and I think we did have mostly consensus on the part of the commission. You see the areas in green there. You have them in, I think, blue in your staff report. Some of them relate to the we changed kind of the title of that from garage placement and design to garage and driveway design, and then we changed some of the text, and maybe it's worthwhile reading just the first paragraph. In most cases, the curb appeal and livability of a home will be enhanced if the living area rather than the garage is the most prominent feature of the front facade. Garage doors can have a noticeably negative impact to the street-facing elevation of a home and cumulatively on appearance of the neighborhood. To reduce prominence of garages and driveways, home design should, to the extent feasible, reflect a careful consideration of the following principles, and then goes into the principles that we have, and then there's several examples of garage doors and offsets and driveways and those types of things. And this was one of the things that was brought up a couple of different times out of the workshop and some of the comments that you saw in that Exhibit 2 that you have. And I think the response and the language changes that were proposed by Commissioner Teft were in response to some of those things. Although he's here, so I guess he can speak to that.
No, they were a direct response. I remember one of the participants was very concerned because it looked like these were mandatory things. And yeah. And when I read the sentence, when I read the way the opening was written, I could see how she got that impression. So, you know, it's one of those situations where you keep reading it and reading it and reading it, and you think you're reading what you think is there, and then some fresh eyes looked at it and, yeah, you know, gave us a whole different take. So any issues with this?
Well, we just get back into the problem situation. Is the 32-foot wide lot and a requirement for a two-car garage?
Yeah.
It's, you know, doesn't leave a lot of room left to architecturally manipulate it.
Huh. And if we're fortunate, maybe that's something we address out of the general plan LCP update, is getting rid of maybe the two-car garage requirement there. It certainly makes things difficult.
Yeah. And there was a consensus at the last meeting not to mention the possibility of a parking exception in this guideline, but that is something that the department can certainly make people aware of.
We do. Yeah. I mean, we do try to facilitate folks getting through the process. I mean, that's what we're there for, and that's something I've tried doing. I mean, at least since I've been here, I've tried to instill with the planners. It's like, look, part of our job is to help people through the process. And when you see things like that, where the, you know, parking exception thing, everybody thinks, oh, it's a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. It's reflective of a lot of the lots and the designs of the homes that exist in town today. Yes. And the policy is there because it's necessary and needs to be there. Otherwise, we're going to be beating our heads against the wall. You know, it's just, and I think recognizing that, and that's, you know, I mean, you get parking exceptions fairly regularly because of that reason, because people want to do a reasonable sized addition on a house that's non-conforming. Anyway.
And they, a person could actually apply for a parking exception for new construction as well.
Yes.
So any comments on the garage and driveway section? No? Okay, then. I'm sorry.
Just the only other thing that I remember was one of our paving materials was not allowed specifically was gravel at some point. But a contained gravel is a traditional paving method in a salt box in the East Coast. So if it's contained, would it be allowed as a porous paving material?
Not under our current ordinance. Pavers are allowed because it's a solid surface. Right. Gravel's not because it's not a solid surface. And I know Public Works would probably have a little bit of a heartburn with it because it's hard. It is hard. The problem is containing it. Once it gets out on the road, then it creates problems. But our ordinance, as it sits today, requires that you have a solid surface, some sort of solid surface driveway. There would be, you know, amendments that would need to take place in order for us to kind of allow for the gravel driveway thing as a permanent solution. I think we allow for them as temporary in certain cases.
Yeah. In the southeast, it's seashells.
Yeah.
Okay. So then moving on to F, building materials. Short section.
Yeah. I think we had a strikeout here, or was this left over from last time? I'm not sure. Anyway, there was one change for the strikeout, removing that sentence.
Yeah.
I don't think there are any other changes. This is a pretty short section. Oh, that's fuzzy.
So, again, we'll open it up for public comment on the last two sections, which would be building materials and, I think, driveways and garages. Any public comment on either one of those sections? Okay. Then we're going on to G, architectural elements.
Architectural elements. Don't think I had any changes here either.
No changes.
No.
This is a landmine section if you're an architect, so. The only thing about two is this idea of balance is very odd to me because on one hand we don't want the facades to seem different from each other. You know, we say it shouldn't be just the front facade and then everything else is different. But then we don't want lots of windows looking into adjacent properties on small lots. And then so I'm fine with this, but this scares me a bit, just because balance is, we've put a symmetrical house up there. That's always like the kiss of death if I'm in a death match with somebody talking about design. It's like, good design does not mean symmetrical, you know. That's one possibility. And you have another one up there, despite the fact that Spanish. If I had more time in my life, I would get you some modern examples that are really good. I'll just be quiet.
Well, the second one is they're telling you what not to do. It's got a bunch of funky stuff going on with it, and that's more the issue that we're trying to, you know, get away from. That's one of the problems that I see sometimes. I mean, really, what the policies are meant to do is to avoid the thing on the right. Versus make you do what's on the left. That was really just more to show you, you know, what a balanced front looks like. I mean, it's a traditional house. I mean, I don't know. But the one on the right is really what we're trying to kind of get away from, is the very busy, lots of sort of discordant architectural features.
Yeah, I'm kind of with Michael on this one that. I just wonder if there shouldn't be a 3 that talks about, point 3 that talks about, you know, maybe maybe the possibility of, you know, modern design being asymmetric or creative design being asymmetric. I was just thinking if two started with a phrase that was, you know, in many traditional styles of architecture, architectural elements should be balanced on the building. Something to that, in most traditional styles of architecture, should be balanced. But then a three that would say something to the effect that, you know, in modern architecture, dramatic effect can sometimes be achieved through the use of asymmetry or something like that. To just.
We could add a second.
I'm struggling for words here, but that concept.
Commissioner Taft, maybe he starts out, the second sentence in there. One option is to achieve balance through the vertical and horizontal alignment of the elements. It seems to, you've got a pregnant pause there. There seems to be a second part of that sentence. Another option is to... is through asymmetrical balance, or phrasing the term is, you know. Give me a hand here, Michael.
I'm trying to get something that doesn't cause more problems.
Yeah, no.
Options to create balance, maybe through vertical and horizontal alignment, or could also include other asymmetrical means. The thing I was trying to get at is the architectural elements imply occupation. The thing that's really hard is to see so much of some of the elevations look like they're a box store or something like that. They just don't look like somebody inhabits this house. You know, where they default to, you know, the absolute minimum for ventilation, and you end up with a wall area that's massive, it's kind of a, they need elements to show habitation, and then those elements like balconies, doors, windows, should be arrayed in such a way that it's considered. I'm more concerned about avoiding the blank facade. There's different ways to look at balance, but the worst one is one that has nothing to work with because they've chosen to just make it blank. There's a surprising number of projects around that.
But that wouldn't be consistent with the articulation section.
Yeah, you're right.
I think we want to allow for asymmetry when asymmetry is appropriate. On the other hand, I don't think we want to allow for carte blanche for asymmetry because there are certain architectural styles that call for symmetry. I mean, right. you don't want to see someone come in with a colonial design, or a Cape Cod design where it's not balanced. So I think at some point we need to... The requirement for balance should be related to the architectural style. In other words, if the architectural style calls for a balance, then it should be balanced. If it doesn't call for balance, then do your thing.
One thing I would say is we should make it building elevations plural. That's one thing. That way it doesn't say that the only thing we're looking at is the front.
Okay, that's good.
That would be one thing that I think would help.
Michael, do you think that maybe you mentioned architectural elements of being habitat oriented, maybe leasing something? Hello?
Yeah.
Do you think that the architectural elements should be something in here about habitat
orientated? Sorry.
It could be we could put something in there. Architectural elements exhibit and demonstrate occupation of the home or something like that. And may be balanced on the, and should also be balanced on the building elevations. And then if you feel there's a need to go beyond that, it's just the part of new urbanism, as a lot of these things come from, that I really can buy into is that part about habitation. You know, and elements aren't just doors and windows. They're porches and balconies and things like that that look like someone could appear there and occupy that house. And it's the tiny window that you can't imagine someone looking through that starts to take away from the house being occupied and starts to look like you just didn't have any concern for the appearance of the place on whichever side is being perceived there. So if we say we want the elements to be balanced on the elevations, and the alignment also has to do with size, shape, and proportion. This gets to be really complicated, and I'm getting too technical for what should be a simple guideline. So I want to try to not add too much restrictive language, but at the same time, I see what you're trying to say. You're saying, I'm trying to say we need elements. The elements demonstrate somebody lives here, not just decoration. They're usable things of occupation. And then when those are utilized in the design, they should be thought of coherently on the building elevations, as part of the building elevations. And one way to achieve that is through a balance of vertical and horizontal alignment of elements. Or it could be vertical and horizontal relationship of elements, is to consider the vertical and horizontal relationship of elements. That way balance is, alignment isn't as critical as relationship.
Okay, so going with what you first said, let's see what this sounds like. Architectural elements should exhibit and demonstrate habitation and should also be balanced on the building elevations.
I think it'd be easier if they were split into two different statements.
Well, as soon as I said that, I kind of thought the same thing. Yeah. All right. Should exhibit and demonstrate habitation, period.
Architectural element should reflect the habitation and use of the structure? Is that?
Well, we can start to elaborate on should you know, their evidence of internal and external use of the structure. You know,
that's good. Internal and external.
You know, elevations should be considered and have balance through vertical and horizontal consideration of vertical and horizontal relationships. I think that is non-controversial.
Architectural elements should reflect the habitation and internal and external use of the structure. Was that the?
Sure.
Okay, that's good.
That's much better than habitation.
So what was it? Sorry.
Whatever you said.
Architectural elements should reflect the habitation and internal and external use of the structure.
I'm looking at Michael mostly because this is your
should reflect.
Brainstorm, yeah. But I would also like to go back to the concept of architectural style, because I think that's important. You know, you don't take a traditional architectural style and just slap a window someplace because you want a sofa on that wall or whatever.
The caption does state, I think that has a lot of effect, is some architectural styles require simple shapes and formal symmetry of the doors and windows. And it could say of the architectural elements instead of doors and windows, but that's okay.
I also think that we need to remember who our audience is. And our audience, you know, are the homeowners. And hopefully if they hand this on to their architect. But some of the concepts may not quite translate without a pretty extensive glossary to a normal homeowner. And I think we just need to be careful. I think anything more than what we've talked about would probably get us out of what I believe is our audience frame of reference.
The other problem I have is that this may be a little bit too focused on symmetry. You know what I'm saying? Let me just try this again in terms of the symmetry thing. If we just put on two, if we just started that out with for most traditional architectural styles, and then architectural, you know, and then added a three that said something like when the architectural style of a home does not call for symmetry, creative asymmetric placement of architectural elements may provide dramatic interest. Just to let people know that you can do that if you do it well.
Yeah. That's a lot better than the sentence I was working on.
Yes, that's fine.
I could probably live with it, but it makes the theoretical assumption that the style is the important thing. Style is the last thing. The style is resultant of other good decisions about how you deal with materials, how you deal with details. And the problems we have with most of the houses in the city is style is never based on those things. It's based on a thin visual illusion of those things as opposed to the real thing. So I just don't want to invest a lot of design time in just being an illusion. So style concerns me whenever we use that term because it's the crutch of lack of thinking about other things. And that may be getting too outside of our audience, but I'm very concerned about defaulting to style because then all of a sudden we demand a certain style and then we've totally lost the ability to design anything. There are good styles and bad styles, and so I'm just concerned about style. But I'm not
suggesting those statements in lieu of the statement that you were making, Michael. And as a matter of fact, perhaps the statement that you were making about the fact that the architectural elements should reflect the habitation and internal and external use should actually be number two. And then these other two statements that bring in the concept of style should be after that, should be three and four.
I'm okay with balancing several statements together.
You know, we could eliminate the word style if possible, but I would like to see the word asymmetrical in there somewhere, the asymmetrical balance. And to bring that concept in there at some point, that's what we're trying to achieve, and that you know, is what I would like to see anyways as an achievement on that. Because you have buildings that are of certain periods, such as Federalist buildings, that are based on symmetry. You know, it's basically four-way symmetry, you know, in plan and in elevations. But then you also have balanced, you know, balanced solutions that are based on asymmetry. You think of most Frank Lloyd Wright buildings, you know. So yeah. We need to get that second statement in there, and I The first sentence dealt with the first one, okay. I thought that we just needed a second sentence in there somewhere. So.
Yeah. I go back to what Catherine was saying. I think the term architectural style, traditional architectural style, and modern architectural is something that the public will be able to comprehend. You know, it's the most. It may not be the most. It may not be the most academic way to put it, but it may be the most accessible way to put it for members of the public.
I'm okay with that. I really am.
So are we okay then with putting the statement about the architectural elements reflecting the internal and external use as number two, and then the other ones as number, because that should be, that's more important. Yeah.
You've confused me.
Yeah, me too. what did we wind up with?
Okay. Here's what I've got, so please correct me. Okay. Number one, which says that the element should be in proportion to the overall home design, I think that could stay number one. Then number two would say, architectural elements should reflect the habitation and internal and external use of the structure. Number three would say, for most traditional styles, architectural elements should be balanced on the building elevations. One option to achieve balance is through the vertical and horizontal alignment of the elements. And then item number four would say, when the architectural style of a residence does not call for symmetry, creative asymmetric placement of architectural elements may provide dramatic interest.
I can go with that. Because we said dramatic. I'm going to spend $400,000. I want drama.
Yeah.
More changes? We're good?
You want to send that to me?
I'm busy writing it down.
Okay. I lost about halfway through. All right, so.
Okay. So then, additions to existing homes. That's H, which used to be 8. For those of you that are
looking for an old copy. What happened is the numbers they were always letters, but the numbers, something happened with the formatting thing, and I had to get rid of it. And so, anyway, that's why that's that way. It was originally.
You're using Microsoft Word, aren't you?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, that's what happened. Okay, so this. Just 1 second.
So it doesn't look like we have any changes to this section.
Yeah, this is additions. I don't think we did anything with this the last time. I think this has been mostly unchanged for a while, actually.
That phrase seamlessly that one of our citizens pointed out is something that concerns me a bit. Because seamlessly then seams sometimes mean something broke down in scale. You've put a seam there and you can see a change in scale. So seamlessly could lead to large facades, or, you know, I don't want somebody to misconstrue that.
And it doesn't add anything, really. It's just a word.
Should integrate into the overall design, I think, is actually less problematic.
Yeah. Everybody? Yeah?
Yep.
All right. Yep.
Other comments? Okay, so why don't we then open public comment on sections G or H, if there's anything that any members of the public would like to say on these two sections, please let us know. Okay, we'll bring it back to commission. And move on to section, any other comments have come to anyone at this point? Okay, so we'll move on to section I, which is privacy.
I don't think we have any changes there either.
We have this number five here, which says, which is a fairly general statement. It says second floor decks and balconies should be designed and located with consideration given to the privacy of adjoining properties. It seems that we could include roof decks in that as well. It's sort of the same idea.
We could just eliminate second floor. You know, just say decks and balconies.
We certainly could.
Yeah. What do you think? Okay. Decks and balconies.
Anyone have heartburn with that? No.
No.
No. Okay.
Okay.
I just lost that there was a term in here that said when. Just a second.
I wonder if we shouldn't switch 4 and 5. It's kind of, 4 kind of seems to be the end, you know what I'm saying? And
it just seems to flow better that way.
On the preamble there, it's, you know, it says, the first sentence, while it may not be possible to ensure complete privacy between homes, given the small lot sizes in the city, designs should attempt to lessen the impacts, you know, I'm having a little problem with that, as much as possible. You know, that could put an overall overarching burden.
You could just remove the as much as possible part.
Yeah.
Then it just says, hey, take a look at it.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I think they're just words. I mean, it's obviously, well, yeah. Obviously.
The Constitution is just words.
Obviously, one cannot lessen the impacts more than is possible.
But possible means, means unlimited budgets and undue costs. So
I'm fine with just eliminating that phrase.
Okay.
Also, we have three possibles within that one, paragraph. So
is that possible?
Apparently so.
Okay, so that's.
I would also take out the possible as the beginning of the last sentence, too, and just say options.
Say that one more time.
On the last sentence of the preamble, take out the word possible and just start with options. That's my recommendation.
Okay. Yeah, I think that reads better, too.
Yeah, that's good.
And then there was a... design should attempt to lessen the impact or impacts. You know, we're getting into, so would plural the proper form there, or?
I think it should be singular.
Okay, yeah, that seemed to me like it should be singular too.
And if we're getting really that picky, I think you should have a colon after the last word below.
One more time.
I believe after options for reducing privacy conflicts are noted below, I think you put a colon there because you indent after that.
Yeah, with the list. So what about the designs? What did you, is there concurrence to change it to design?
I'm sorry?
in the preamble, there was second line after the comma, the designs to design.
I think that should be plural.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that reads...
Yeah. And impacts singular.
Okay, as long as we're being really nitpicky, number two, point number two has a different form than all the other points. If you want to make it consistent, it should say when placing windows inside building walls, window location should be offset or staggered to avoid, because all of the other ones use that should be. Or actually, it would probably read the best if it just said window locations inside building walls should be offset or staggered to avoid. You don't need the when placing.
Is the side building walls, does that really read? Do we mean side yard walls?
Pardon?
Do we really mean side yard walls? Does that inside? We're not saying, are we saying the side of the building? Not.
Yeah, and it's this in the sides, in the windows that are in the side, they're facing the side property lines.
So inside or rear walls of buildings?
What about, or make it the building's side walls.
As opposed to the front walls. I guess I'm not just... I want to make sure clear that we think the problem is in a particular area. Or is it all building walls?
I think it's, you know, assuming perpendicular lots with side setbacks with houses that have side walls facing one another. Is the issue that it's trying to resolve.
I guess it's just that the side walls tend to be closer together than
right.
Front walls are back.
Yeah, so when you line up those windows, then, you know, you're like, how you doing? And if you only have 5-foot setbacks or 4-foot setbacks or 3-foot setbacks, then you could potentially just reach out and shake hands if you don't have a screen.
My wife's my editor, so I usually don't get hung up on things like this. But my sense is side building is different than side yard wall. Because we're really talking about the walls that are facing the side yards, aren't we? If my colleagues feel it's clear, I will.
How about this, Michael? How about windows in the side walls of buildings should be offset or staggered to avoid looking directly into a neighboring room?
Or maybe windows facing a side yard.
We do have the diagram.
Yeah.
Right. So what do we have now? Does anybody?
I'd like to.
Let me read this again and see if this doesn't say what we mean. Windows in the side walls of buildings should be offset or staggered to avoid looking directly into a neighboring room. Any other issues with...
Go ahead. I also agree that we should flip 4 and 5. the order of 4 and 5.
And if possible, have the diagram on the same page as the verbiage.
Yeah, it could be. There's room at the bottom.
Yeah, it'll fit. I think sometimes it just gets popped down when stuff gets moved around.
Microsoft Word.
Yep.
Any other comments on privacy? We'll move on to landscaping. Some changes, small changes here.
So, yeah, we have landscaping and where did... Oh, okay. I just have this must have been left over from last. Why is it not showing? Anyway, I think this change was from the last meeting. Residential landscaping should include the following. We just changed it to the list. I don't think this was directed last time. Looks like there's a couple.
Just wording.
Mostly. Yeah.
You're missing the strikeouts. That's all.
Yeah.
The only thing I'd add, Scott, to you is on number 5. And when we're talking about street trees and on the city-approved street tree list, and just to add something, you know, as long as they are appropriate for the, you know, the zoned area.
You're referring to the...
What we discussed.
Other policy as it relates to height?
Yeah.
Without doing more research into that, I don't know that we can do that. I know there are several of those trees that would exceed the height in the zone district. I don't know. There are some that are lower growing. There's a couple. I'm not sure how many.
But street trees would not be exempted from requirement number 4. There's nothing that says if you're planting a street tree, you can plant something that grows 200 feet tall. You'd still have to plant something that did not exceed the maximum height.
Well, that's the problem. I need to go back and look at the street tree list again. I haven't looked at it for a while. I need to go look and see how many options we actually have on there. I'm not sure. There might be one. I don't want every tree for every house that we build this moving forward from today to be the same tree.
How is the street tree list determined?
I believe the list was run through Public Works.
But I mean, what are the criteria for being a street tree?
In this city, I'm not sure. the list is one that's housed in Public Works.
If memory serves me right, there was a committee that was put together to review the street tree list, and there was and it actually went before the planning commission, and then went before the city council.
Yeah.
So, and there was trees that were taken off of that, such as palms.
It was a reaction too. They were trying to get away from the trees that would heave the sidewalk, and then also tended to have long-term branch issues. And the palms, and then there were some other ones, but it was, there was a lot of work put into it. What I don't think ever happened was a targeted list of where to put them, though. And offsets from other properties where they were supposed to go, because sometimes we were going to be planting more than we had on the property.
Well,
that's another issue.
They end up in the right of way. which is normally where you'd expect to find them. It's just we don't, they don't all, that's not, the city doesn't have a hard and fast rule related to that. So a lot of times you'll also see it in the front yard someplace if it doesn't make sense to put it in the right of way.
Well, perhaps we can use that phrase when possible.
You know, one other thing that occurs to me, Scott, is in number four, there's basically two options here. You can plant a tree that grows really, really high and keep it pruned, or you can plant a tree that grows to a height that doesn't, a mature height that doesn't exceed the maximum building height, right? It seems to me that the second of those options is one that we should strongly encourage, because the first one's not going to happen. I mean, you know, the house gets built, the tree gets planted, three owners later, you really think the guy's going to be out there chopping the top of the tree to, you know, to meet these guidelines? Not going to happen. It seems to me we should, it seems to me that we should either eliminate that, the, you know, the possibility of planting a tall growing tree and then pruning it, or strongly encourage planting a tree that the mature height will not be excessive.
Well, and I think that's really more the intent, is to pick a low growing tree, and then the idea there is to maintain it at a height not to exceed the height of the house. I don't think the intent is to pick a tall growing tree that goes 50 feet and then try to prune it so it doesn't get taller than 25. I mean, I guess we could change how it reads so it's that specific to that. I mean, that's really where we're going with it. You're going to get ones that are, grow approximately 20 feet tall, but that tree could be 30 feet tall pretty easily and then would exceed the height of the house.
Well, then, it, yeah, then the wording definitely, it should say choose a tree that does not exceed the, you know, the, whose mature height does not exceed the maximum height of the zoning district, and then keep it trimmed lower than that height.
Such that that's the case.
Pardon?
I said such that that's the case, yeah.
Yeah, because this kind of seems like you can do either one. You can either trim it, you know, or you can plant one that doesn't grow tall to begin with. And again, I think at some point we should, I think somewhere in there we should specify maximum allowable building height, because I think other, it makes it, I think otherwise it might be confusing. It's, it, people might think there's a maximum tree height for the zone, you know, that, yeah, just to make it clear what height we're talking about.
What you could do is, in view-sensitive areas, proposed trees should be chosen not to exceed the maximum height of the zone district, or you can change it to the, you know, the building height. That way you're just striking out all of that about maintaining it and choosing a tree not to exceed.
Right, and if you want the maintaining there, you could just put it in with an and. And, you know, at the end of that sentence, and maintained at a height that does not exceed the maximum height of the zone. Well, it will have specified building height previously, so then people will know. Let us know when you've got.
I'm just making notes so I get it
okay
squared away.
Okay.
So are there any other issues?
Are there any other feelings on my suggestion for number 5 about changing where possible street trees should be chosen from the city's approved not to exceed 25 feet?
Well, how about if we said street trees should be chosen from the city's approved street tree list and shall comply with condition number 4?
That works.
Yeah, there are areas where you could have tall trees, you know, on the street trees and
stuff. But number 4 says in view sensitive areas.
Right.
Okay.
So what was the... I mean, 5's telling you if you have a street tree, you need to choose it from the street tree list. So...
And should comply to number 4, be in compliance to number 4.
Or at least consider number 4.
Yeah, it's going to have to be in consideration right now because I don't
where
know.
Where possible.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to have to be one of those things, you know, short of, you know, me. I'm going to go back and look at it at this point, but I mean, and I can bring that back, I guess. I mean, we're going to have one more meeting, hopefully, with the resolution, so.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, this concept and the street tree list are going to have to be brought into consistency with one another at some point. It doesn't make sense to say.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah. When we're done with this, that's where I would. That's one of the things where I would go and go, okay, we need to start working on this. And in fact, once I go look at it, I'm going to go talk to Public Works and say, hey, we need to take another run at this to address this concern specifically.
And I suspect there may be, you know, this is not the only community that has this issue. I suspect, you know, and the people that sell trees are not, you know, they're aware of it. I suspect there are probably a lot more species of lower growing tree available now than there may have been a few years ago.
Yeah.
I just want everybody to be aware of, we have a bush in our front yard that's reaching probably 35 feet tall. So there's trees, you know, plants do grow differently here in Morro Bay.
Okay. Any other remarks on thoughts on that? No? Okay. So hillside development. This is a new section, so there may be more discussion on this section. We've been doing them two at a time, but...
Okay, hillside. So the hillside standards were one that was we had it in the guidelines for a while, and then it was removed, and then there was direction to put it back. But given the comments that we'd have previously, I didn't put back the same one that we had before because it didn't seem like there was any way to really reach consensus on that. So I changed it. And limited the applicability of it. And so it says the hillside development guidelines apply to properties with lot sizes 5,000 square feet or greater and with slopes exceeding 15%. The intent of the following policies is to preserve, enhance, and protect the visual quality of the Morro Bay hillside areas. Project design should take into consideration the site's natural features, topography, visual character, and unique qualities and surrounding environment, to the adherence to the following guidance. And then we have step the building up or down the hill, set the structure into the hillside topography while also balancing or limiting the amount of grading to avoid erosion and visual impacts. Step back the taller portions of the structure to reduce the appearance of height. Avoid interrupting natural ridgelines and skylines. Set the house below these.
minimize exposed foundations under floor areas and downhill cantilevers, and avoid use of tall support column utilized for support of overhanging areas, vary height of building elements. And so some of the figures, you see the figure on the left has the structure stepped up the hillside and cut into the hill. The figure on the right is where you have one of those exposed understory areas where it's suggested that that be limited. Again, avoid exposed understory with large cantilever supports and tall columns. And then this is the thing to site it below the ridge lines and a diagram supporting that. Comments?
Do we have the ability to, is it really right to call this a policy? Should we just state again that it's a guideline?
Oh.
I want to take a break.
Okay.
So it's okay.
We're coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I think we're just going to take a quick break here, like 5-minute break, and then when we come back, we will finish up this discussion, and we will definitely take public comment on these two sections. So we'll take 5 minutes.
Yeah. Just didn't want her to miss.
Yeah.
Just didn't want her to miss.
Probably not the only one.
Stretch the legs at least.
Oh my gosh.
I've got to go take an instrument proficiency. Check ride tomorrow. I feel like a little kid. You know, take his instrument. Good evening. We're back. What we're going to do here is just finish up our discussion of the hillside development, and then we're going to open it up for public comment. And just to be clear, guys, we're not going to be too formal here. So when we have the public comment, if you happen to think of something that you wanted to mention about B, fine. That's fine. So I think we were talking about street trees and the approved tree list. Oh, I'm sorry. No. We had just presented the hillside development, and now it's time for comments from the commission.
Okay. I guess I'll go on this one first. This whole section, I don't believe belongs in the design guidelines for a couple different reasons. One is, these guidelines are more appropriate for new subdivision development. It's really extremely difficult to fit this into an existing pattern and framework of an existing neighborhood. Most particularly because we have our hillside lots are built out over 95% already constructed, built out, and almost every one of those houses in those areas are going to be non-conforming. So it's a matter of fairness and it's a matter of consistency that we cannot have, we cannot require new or additions to structures to be put at such disadvantage as this would. In designing a new subdivision, you can account for this. You can do the lot placements and the lot layout to allow for this, but not overlay this into an existing neighborhood. I think it's just too onerous, and it's actually would restrict the building to a sense that there are going to be lawsuits against it. And I think we're going to get upheaval against it. And I've already heard comment against it. The other thing, too, is that where this restricts the most it restricts the highest value property, the highest value location on the property. And if you're on a downslope lot, this takes your west-facing view and makes it much, you know, takes that area where you would be getting the best view areas, which is your highest value property, and eliminates it. And that's why I see it's really problematic. And it's not, you know, in your next door neighbor. This is going to be infilling into existing neighborhoods. Your next door neighbor already has this, and then you would be restricted. That puts you at a disadvantage, and it actually loses hundreds of thousands of dollars, or up to hundreds of thousands of dollars of your property value. So this is a really, really problematic to overlay into existing neighborhoods.
Jerry, is it the interrupting the natural ridge lines portion, or is it not using large cantilevers that you're objecting to?
It's stepping down the face of the hill. You know, I can, you know, running your maximum height, building height down parallel to the slope of the hill is where it's most problematic. Setting the property into the hillside isn't, I don't have a problem with that. You know, so, you know, eliminating the cantilevers. If you look at, say we're going to overlay this over the north Morro Bay neighborhoods, where are you going to take your point of view for your ridgeline protection? If you take it at the in front of the property line or at the street level, every property from Greenwood on up blocks the ridgeline. There are the last row of properties on Nutmeg are the ridgeline. So it doesn't make any sense to, you know, so essentially if this was in effect, that whole upslope property, every upslope property on Nutmeg, you know, if this applied to those properties, would not be allowed to build anything at all, because a garage would obstruct the ridge line. So where this is appropriate and where it could be used is on the larger lots that can be architecturally planned and laid out for this, you know, these kind of restrictions. And if you have the standard grid layout that we have in both, you know, especially in the North Morro Bay and even in the Del Mar area, this whole scheme doesn't work.
Are the lots in North Morro Bay typically 5,000 square feet or greater?
They're most, you know, the ones in North Morro Bay are, most of them are smaller. You get into the Del Mar area, and those lots are larger. Mm-hmm. You get, but this is a slippery slope. I can see somebody coming back and saying, oh, well, why not, you know, why not 4,000 square feet instead of 5,000 square feet? That's not a big difference. And then you're going to be picking up, you know, a lot of the lots in North Morro Bay. So I would see this, I don't have a problem with this kind of a format in the subdivision standards. And I think that's where it's appropriate. I don't think it's appropriate on existing lots. And for the other thing, too, is how can we make, you know, 95% of the existing houses non-conforming? That's a simple matter of fairness.
Well, Scott, let me just go back for a second. This was not in the guidelines, How did it get back into the guidelines? Wasn't there a consensus to bring it back?
You requested that we put it back in. And so I didn't go
not,
down the...
Not me, personally.
You all, or the majority of you, requested
y'all,
that we put back
y'all
in.
Y'all
majority did.
Yes, a majority did. That's correct. And so I brought it back, but realizing that I didn't think there was a chance we were going to reach any consensus with how it was formatted before, I went away from that and said, let's take a look at limiting what this applies to, because we have hillside lots that are very small, and you can't really apply these guidelines to those. So I came up with a cutoff of about 5,000 square feet. Most of our lots are, you know, I think over 50% of our lots are smaller than that. So it takes out most, you know, half of the lots as it sits there today. And you can't really use these design principles on lots that are smaller than that. It's not until you get to lots that are 5,000 square feet and bigger that you can start moving things around a little bit to be responsive to your environment. Because otherwise, you have 50-foot wide lots, 100-foot deep, you can move things around a little bit, you know, and maybe be responsive to some of these things. If you're a 4,000 square foot, you have 4-foot setbacks, you have a 40-foot wide lot, moving something a foot is probably not doing you anything. So that's kind of where I came up with that limitation. And then the 15% slope, that starts to get into a fairly good-sized slope, and so that's something that you could actually set a house into. So that's where I came up with those numbers from. These aren't guidelines, so these would never prohibit development of any lots. I would say that, ever, because, again, they're guidelines. That would be a taking. It's not policy.
So I guess then the question, the sort of a general question, is how do you move from what has become a pattern of development that is perhaps not the best standard to a better standard? In other words, how do you ever get from one set of standards to a different set of standards if you don't change the standards at some point? I mean, whenever change standards from an earlier set of standards to a later set of standards, there are going to be some buildings which were built under the earlier set of standards that will be made to be nonconforming. I mean, that happened when they changed the setback requirements in North Morro Bay, as you well know.
If you look at the, you know, and agreeably, you know, the smaller lot development, which is mostly where the problems are, that this wouldn't affect. But if we're looking at that, and that this is what my biggest concern is, when you have already a 95% build out on it, this is the, you know, the horse has already left the barn. I think we can apply design guidelines and design standards as we have in the rest of this document, which is appropriate. And it, you know, they would apply these standards would apply to, you know, view properties that you see from public areas, and we've already established that, and we've already done that. We've increased the articulation. We've increased, you know, the materials, so we don't have large facade, large blocks of stucco. So we're handling that in this. If this is applied, this is going to create a lot of animosity that I don't think we need, and I don't think it's going to do any good, because 95% of these lots are already built that won't apply to this standard, and they're already built and they're already there.
Well, but however, in all fairness, I have to point out, houses don't last forever. At some point, the existing structures will be replaced.
I know, but you can repair houses for almost forever with the existing where they are, and so you can change stucco, you can change out studs, you can change out roofs. You know, wood structures are readily repairable and can last hundreds of years. Look at some of the Japanese temples. So
yeah. Why don't we get the rest of the commission to weigh in on this? I don't want to make this a dialogue.
No, I walk Nutmeg all the time with my dogs. I mean, I think Nutmeg's a great example of there's really radically different solutions. I can think of some of the structures there that are almost vertical above the garage, and I can think of some that do exactly what's shown here. So I don't think these are anything more than attempts to say when you have the ability to economically, topography, geotechnically, consider this. It's a guideline. It's not a restriction. I would get rid of number four because that's something that I recall from like the county standards for developing massive lots where they want to pull people down from putting Disneyland on top of the hill. And I don't think that's appropriate for here for our lot sizes at all. But I don't think stepping the building up or down on the hill, see figure 38, is necessarily anything other than a guideline. I think 36, 37 are particularly apt. But I would strike four. Five, I guess, relates to 37. I'm not sure I see that condition. Is that one that you see, Scott, come in very often? Number 37? I mean, I can think of a couple examples of very suburban houses that they just plopped on one of our hillside houses, and they've got 30-foot, like, lower sections. But
when I read it, I thought of a couple of houses came to mind that I saw I had seen out there that I was like, oh, well, this applies to those types of situations. Mm-hmm. So is it prevalent or predominant? No, I don't think so. Does it pick up on an issue that I've seen out there? Yes. Just the overall stepping, you know, into the slope kind of does too. I've seen some that don't do a really great job of that as well. I mean, I would say this: most of these policies were I picked the most innocuous ones that were sort of not super, super, super specific. And I probably perused maybe about 6 cents of hillside design guidelines, and kind of used the, you know, sort of the higher level, you know, policies in there versus the more specific. That the ridgeline thing was in reference to complaints that I've heard a couple of times about development that we've had. I mean, again, I don't think it's a huge issue that comes up very often. I would absolutely agree with that. So
I don't see how we can do anything with number four, to tell you the truth. I think that's one that things definitely out of the horse is definitely out of the barn on that one. The lots are on record are mm-hmm. ridge lots. I mean they're gonna be built there. But the in two I think is partially problematic because, you know, some of this top clay layer on the hillsides is down 4, 5, 7, 8 feet. And you've got to get below that. So you're gonna dig in a lot. And if you're gonna dig in a lot, then you get into problematic aspects of your retaining wall gets to be a certain height, and you've got to balance retaining wall costs versus the amount that you've got to go uphill to excavate. You know, so I think some of these things come back that there's really good reasons you see some of those things that we see, but I also don't think it's wrong to suggest we don't want to see 4 or 5-story facades. Straight up. I mean, that's my biggest concern is that if we don't say anything, then we're saying there is no goal. And if we say there is a possible goal, we understand you might not be able to do it. I've seen things handled pretty skillfully that don't step back much, but they give the illusion of stepping back. And I've seen some that probably step back 8 to 10 feet each level. And they're on that block, either north of Avalon or Elena or south of Elena, and or maybe 2 blocks, 3 blocks north of Elena. The block south of Elena has some really nice larger homes that I think have some stepbacks facing the west. And I think you have to get, I'm not sure what it is, it's not maybe San Jacinto, not that far up, maybe it is. That's where you get some really tall ones on Nutmeg.
We have quite a few, we have some up that are pretty tall, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, for the most part, they're really there's an extraordinarily contemporary one next to one that's very Spanish compositionally that has a lot of variation in it. You know, so there's been some pretty radically different reactions to building on those lots. But I think if we have the capacity, and it's possible, the ability to not to get away from the large facade, I think, is all this is trying to say. And I think everybody is sensitive to the fact that there are technical problems with, you know, doing everything that's in here. And throughout this, you know, A through K, however many letters are left here. So I would like to see something in there. I'm willing to strike several of these things, especially if you think they're especially problematic. But it is not. I do want to strike policy because it's just a guideline.
Yeah, that's
and good. I want to make sure everybody's aware it's just a guideline. Mm-hmm. There are many good reasons not to follow these things for certain particular lots, and it could be precedent next door. The neighborhood is like this. And the topography suggests this technique of building is appropriate for this, and there is no other way to do it that's economically feasible. But it's the lack of articulation for multiple stories, 3-4-story facades. It's really tough, I think.
I respectfully disagree with you, Jerry, but I think this is a scale and mass issue. And addressing the hillside development, I think, should be in these guidelines and at least put it into awareness. And, you know, there's... There was a project I worked on years ago it was in an unincorporated area and part of the county. And what I think we at Morro Bay have is because we have a planning department here, we could have a better relationship because it's more local than county broad. And the issue that when I was looking at this particular development, one of the issues was the slope of the lot. And the 15% is a good, that's a good number. And then being that we're in Morro Bay, we could check it out. You know, we could go see, oh yeah, that's 15 or 20%. And a lot of times in the county, there's sometimes think, you know, like people pencil in not the correct numbers, you know, and that's kind of what happened in this particular development. And this is back in 2005. There was an article in the Tribune that came out and basically said in Laguna Beach, I think it was, they had a massive development slide that was under development, slid down the hill. And one of the things in the Tribune said that this was a very similar topography, very similar geography that we have in here in Cayucas and in Morro Bay here. So the foundations, although they're expensive, I grant you that, but I think it's a better design for safety. And for what the topography we have. Also, I feel that the guidelines need to bring to face, what the vision of Morro Bay is. And I think that this, with the hillsides and the articulation, it's not a restriction, it's just an awareness, you know, that we're gonna have on this. The other issues that, you know, like, and I don't know if this is public works or part of planning, but the other issues that I came across is like drainage.
you know, when you look at that, you know, you have hillside development and then, you know, draining into other people's lots. Now, granted, you know, you have a right to build, but you don't have a right to flood out somebody else's, you know, lot downstream. So, you know, I'm not saying to put it in the guidelines. What I'm saying is that it makes people look and see what their effect is, the development of their development, how it's going to affect the neighborhood. I feel that one of the number four what you talked about, I was kind of looking at that myself, and yeah, maybe I'll agree with Michael that it'd be kind of hard to lace in at this time, but I feel strongly that we should have something in here for people to consider, and you know, I kind of like what you've put together actually here. So I'm in favor of having this in here.
I feel that it's important that we do take out the word policy and change that to guideline. It does read fairly strict. If you read it, it says you shall do this, and it may be better to lighten it up a little bit, but I feel it's very important that we do have a policy on hillside development. Yes, the horse may be out of the barn, but, you know, eventually we make it to rebuild the barn and gather him back in. I think that number four, I could live with that being taken out, but the rest of it, I think it's important that it stays into the guidelines.
Well, I have a few thoughts. I agree with you. I think the word policy is too strong. I think the other thing that's too strong is the end of this, the first or the final sentence in the introduction, the part of where it says through adherence to the following guidance. I think it'd be fine to just stop the sentence after the word environment and put a colon in there. In terms of the natural ridge lines, I know that there are a lot of lots where that's not possible. However, there are lots where it is possible and it's important. Remember, Black Hill is not Black Hill. The little hill,
Cerrito Peak,
yeah, is a developable lot. It would be a shame to see that profile obliterated with rooftops. So I'd like to see it where I'd just like to put in when feasible, because clearly there are many situations where it's not feasible. I guess those would be my comments. I think these are interim guidelines. I think we need to start approaching this topic. These are guidelines. They're not, you know, they're not ordinance, and I think we need to make a try in this area. So I think
before we go on, I'd just like you guys to put yourself in the shoes of somebody that owns a lot under this situation, that, and see how this would affect the building that you have to put there.
Well, I do own a lot under this situation.
And so do I.
and honestly, I would really have appreciated having some of these guidelines, because we did do a major addition some years ago, and I think we would have done it better if we would have had some of this guidance in place. That's me putting myself in the place of someone who owns one of these lots.
What I would like to do at this point, and then we can bring it back to the commission, there's some people that are waiting here. I really would like to open it up for public comment and ask whoever would like to speak on this or any of the previous sections to come forward and let us hear what you have to say.
Good evening. Kenny Blackwell, Mellow, Morro Bay resident. Losing my voice, sorry. In regard to Landscape J, number four, let's see, I do agree as far as the language about the trees not exceeding a maximum height. I was one of those people that didn't understand what that meant. So I think that's a great thing to include the maximum building height there, because I'd actually tried to find out from Scott what the tree height was, and I got an email back that there's no restriction on tree height, but I think maybe you're referring to older growth trees or something. So I don't know. So a little more clarification there would be really great. The one thing I don't understand on four, I'm a little confused about the phrase in view sensitive areas, so maybe you could clarify for that for me at some point. Let's see. And then in regard to just the items that aren't on the agenda or in the guidelines, items not currently in the guidelines, those are like, every single one of those are things that a lot of us have been fighting really hard to actually get in there. So I'm hoping there will be some consideration for that at some point. All the items, FAR, view blockage, view sharing, the whole list there. So hopefully that will, will be taken into consideration. Thanks.
Thank you.
Good evening. Bob Krause. I just wanted to go back to section I under privacy, and I know there was dialogue from the commission on this, but I don't know if you scratched number three, and if you didn't, it sounds like the only remedy to privacy issues is to make your window smaller. Can you use other materials, glass block, and keep the same size, or maybe some thoughts on that? And then the other part was I too am concerned about J for landscaping, number four, when you talk about the zone district, it would be helpful if maybe you could give me a simplified illustration of a flat lot and one of a slope lot, and tell me what the height would be for a tree. Maybe do a little, I know you can do it when you do construction, when you're trying to calculate how high the roof pitch is going to be, the ridge. Maybe you can show a very simplified illustration of a tree on that lot and how it would fit into that program. I hope I'm clear of what I'm saying there. I think that's it. Thank you.
Okay. So I think I think that would be an illustration of height above natural grade, right? Above average natural grade.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same height limitation that we apply to the house.
Right.
The tree, I mean, it's not going to apply to existing trees.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm not sure what that would serve to do. You're going to be limited to the maximum height that's of the house that's on the lot. So you're going to have a guide there. Once you have the house or the addition,
right?
If it exceeds it, then you're not complying with this. And then I would think that in the way that I've thought about, you know, this particular issue is it's likely that we're probably going to start placing, you know, conditions to that effect on projects. Just so it's on there, you know you have to maintain it, and it has the enforce of a resolution or a condition on a project. I'm pretty comfortable doing that. It was we didn't have, when I was in Pismo, we didn't have a specific policy that did that, but we went down there and started including that same similar language to that in projects. It worked really well. It was easy to enforce. And over time, because I did actually work for the city for quite a while, it started popping back up when trees started getting taller. We got calls. We were able to look at the resolutions and say, hey, you need to cut it down because those approvals run with the land. So they are kind of enforceable. So there is another way to, you know, attack this, not just through the guidelines, but this is a way to let people know about the issue, I think.
And I think Mr. Krause made a good point about maybe the wording in this section I, because we do have three, which says where potential privacy issues exist, smaller windows should be utilized, and then the possibility of using frosted glass or textured glass doesn't come in until number four. I wonder if we shouldn't just combine all of those options into one.
Three and four?
1 point, yeah. In other words, where potential privacy issues exist, options for reducing privacy include smaller windows, increased sill height, landscaping, frosted or textured glass. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
So what you're saying, we'll take combine 3 and 4 and then move it to what is, you know, move 5 to 3 and then 3
well,
and 4.
Right. If we if we combine 3 and 4, it doesn't really matter which order they're in.
Okay.
But it does sort of present all of the options kind of bing, 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 bing.
Well, you know? I think you're right. It's nicer to have it in one sentence. There's no reason to have two. I mean, because really all we're going to talk about in the one is the smaller windows.
Right.
That can just be added as a, you know, as one of the items in there. That's not an issue, and that's a good idea.
Thank you. Because, I mean, the glass block was in there, you see, but when you read it, it doesn't pop out at you because it's kind of subsidiary. Okay. Anyone else want to comment on public comment? So we'll get back to hillsides, I think. Well, I think we don't have a unanimous consensus here. I don't think we're going to get to one, Scott. I think we just have to face the fact that we're not going to be all in agreement on this. And I think the majority would endorse keeping them in the form that they are, or with the modifications that we discussed.
And so I'm seeing that, so I'm going to ask a couple questions. Policies, the guidelines, right?
Yes.
Do we have a consensus on removal of four or going with a where feasible on four? Do I have three? Are you willing to make a call on that?
I appreciate the example of Cerrito Peak, but I don't think it's feasible. I don't think four is feasible here. I would fight in the county for it, but not here.
You know, Scott, where would that... I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry, Richard.
I think that without four, it still works. Okay. And so in the spirit of cooperation, you know.
Okay. I'm fine with removing four. And I'd also like to take Chairman Taft's recommendation of stopping the sentence, the last sentence, at environment.
We might want to consider whether that first apply is the right word either. It should be guidelines, concern, or should be taken into consideration for, as opposed to apply. Apply is kind of determinist too.
Which one are we looking at? I'm sorry.
The first apply, the hillside guidelines. We could say concern or should come under consideration in.
Well, I mean, this actually is a specific thing. Okay, we're applying these, and it's really related to the sentence that talks about we're not going to apply them, not even going to consider them for anything that's 4,999 square feet or smaller. And then if you're 5,000 square feet, but your slope is less than 50%, we're not going to apply it. So that's a specific thing. I would be a little concerned about, you know, backing off and making that sound kind of like it's an option. I mean, really, we're saying, hey, you need to look at it. You need to at least look at these things if you have that scenario where you have the 15% slope over 5,000. I would say if we do remove four, I would also alter figure 38. And instead of have it reference avoid interrupting natural ridge lines, I would have that refer instead to what is number six right now, and that's varying height of buildings elements.
Right.
Okay, if that would be acceptable.
So I think the consensus is, or the at least the majority is, to remove number four. I do have one other thing that I'd like to throw out, if we've got all your concerns so far up to date.
I think I'm good. I'm ready for more.
It seems to me that one of the major reasons that we wouldn't apply these on the smaller lots in North Morro Bay is that you don't see the house anyway, because it's basically blocked by the house and the lot next to it or the lot next to it. I wonder if we shouldn't give ourselves a little bit of an out in terms of the lot size and the slope by adding the idea of other hillside lots that have unusual downhill visual impact, so that if you've got a lot that's just up there by itself, you know, kind of with nothing around it, you might want to take a look at some of these issues. And that would also potentially be a lot where it would be feasible to do some of these things.
If you apply that, then any lot that's upslope would be applicable.
Well, no, not if it's got stuff built in front of it.
No, an upslope lot is you're at the street, you're looking at the lot that's built out to your maximum height. So 50% of these, over 50% of the lots, on especially those small lots on North Morro Bay or any of these hillsides, lot Radcliffe, the subdivision, any of those would be put into play then.
No, if it's 50%, it's not an unusual impact. I mean, if 50% of the lots are like that, it's not unusual.
Well, you're applying it to 50% of the lots then. You know, and you're applying it to 50% of the small lots that you have less of an opportunity to mitigate it.
You wouldn't, because it wouldn't be an unusual visual impact. It would be, if 50% have that same situation, then it's a very usual situation.
Yeah, I don't see that. I don't see why you'd put that in there and then have it disclaim the exact lots you're looking for. You're looking to the condition.
Just throwing it out as for consideration. Okay.
I like it as we have amended it at this point in time.
I have a consideration again for Which one is it? It's the exposed foundations, number five. One of the structural solutions for dealing with the slip plane up there is caissons and pole construction. By their nature, they have exposed foundations and they have, you know, cantilevered conditions. So what you're trying to do is you're trying to get below that slip plane where the weathered serpentine contacts the clay. And so some places it's not applicable, it's not feasible to cut into the hillside, so you use either pole construction or caissons. And this would eliminate that.
It just says it does say minimize, though. It doesn't, and this is a guideline. If there's good reason for it, then I mean, I understand your concern, but I mean, I think there is wiggle room in here for those type of situations.
There's probably, I guess, if you want to go think about it, there are probably lots of situations where you have lots behind one another, where having the exposed underside of it using caissons and grade beams to construct the house or a portion of the foundation, you're going to have foundations out there that are cut into the hillside, or partially cut into the hillside, and then have caissons and grade beams potentially at the front at a portion of it. I've seen them many different ways, and if there's houses and stuff in front of it, I mean, it's on the downhill side, maybe you're not going to see it, so the impact is negligible. But if you have it sitting up there on the uphill side and you're looking at it and you're staring up at it the whole time, maybe that's not when you want to do it, or you have a through lot or something like that. That's when you probably want to probably take a look at minimizing those type of exposures where possible. I mean, they're fairly unattractive when you're looking at it.
I think there's a big difference between an arbitrary decision about style and the way something has to be made. I mean, I'll always go back to the boat analogy. The boats are the best design things we have because they are based on the way they work in the water. And so if we have something that's a natural response using structural intelligence to a condition we have here, that's different than an arbitrary one that talks about something like style to mitigate larger problems. So I want to make sure we don't suggest that people abandon inventive techniques to go to conventional techniques for just because of visual guidelines. So this gets into the great 50s project by John Lautner called the Chemosphere, which is this hillside in Hollywood, which just has this podium come out, and it looks very Jetsons-like. Mm-hmm. Was an unbuildable lot until he figured out how to do that. And it's this classic California modernist design. So it gets into the invention and intelligence versus just style thing again. So we have a lot of stuff in here about visual qualities. And, you know, sometimes if we isolate to one specific case, I don't want to let other concerns get in the way of people building things on buildable lots here. So I'm concerned about that point that Jerry's making there.
Well, I don't think we're trying to exclude necessarily anything. I just think what this references is sometimes these are issues that you see. There are ways, you know, to design around this and to minimize the effect of some of those things. And then not to, you know, purposely you have a support that goes down to support your 2,000 square foot deck that you're putting out there that's sitting out. Maybe that's maybe not where we want to go. I don't know. I mean, if it's not a concern, it's not a concern. Yeah. Get rid of it if you want.
Yeah, this would also eliminate the truss house on the beach. You know, so, you know, these are, you know, some of these solutions are direct results of structural solutions, and they're pure in that way. The same as what we looked at the new structure from down on the Embarcadero with the exposed beams and poles. So I just think we're eliminating.
I don't think the intent is to eliminate anything. Even the opening portion of that sentence says minimize. And these are guidelines, so that's kind of minimize where possible or where we see that there's potential design issues there. Maybe there's not. I mean, or maybe it's not a concern of the commission. If it's not, it can be removed. I don't think any of these things are meant to eliminate, take everything off the table. I don't think that's the intent here.
Jerry,
go ahead.
Would you feel more comfortable if it says where structurally feasible? Minimize, comma, minimize.
Well. Yeah, that would help. It's just there are situations up there where you can't excavate. Mm-hmm. You just literally can't excavate.
I don't see this as a limit on innovation, for even like the whole design from the foundation up. So, like that suggestion you had is good, but I think that what we're doing here is bringing to light people to think about something that maybe they didn't think about. And so, that's...
So, Scott, let me ask a question. If we've got... You've got a guideline here that says step it down the hill. So, essentially, you're using a consistent 25-foot maximum height rather than average natural grade. Which takes precedence? In a court of law, which would take precedence?
Well, average natural grade is how we measure height. But having a guideline that suggests that how you apply that height on a lot, as opposed to front-loading it and having it front forward, maybe out hanging off of the edge if you had a pretty steep lot, and having it laid back into the and paying attention to the topography that you're setting it into, I don't think there's a conflict between the two.
Well, yeah, there is. There's. You would eliminate the third floor on the front end of an upslope lot. If you're going average natural grade, it's measured horizontal. If you're going consistent 25 foot maximum height over grade instead of average natural grade, you're gonna change what you could put on that the front end of that downslope.
I would say you're still going to be able to have multiple levels stories on the lot depending on how you excavate it into the hillside. Yeah. I've worked on 25 of these things in my career. I mean, I've seen them done many different ways, stepping them back into the hillside, I don't see where it's eliminated the capability to have. That where it's pulled floors out of it or anything. I've not seen that. I mean, I see that on the left, you see you have three levels there. Three levels that are potentially, with living area in them. I've seen ones that have four.
Right. But you're not going to be able to put living area further forward if your other two properties are extending out past you and have already built out there, then you're not going to be able to get your view move left or right.
I think what this is meant to do is avoid the three-story solid wall plane. I think that's what we're trying to get rid of. I mean, I think that's what this is meant to do, and it's meant to have the design reflective and respective of the topography that you're putting it on. That's the entire intent.
Yeah, but there's neighborhoods up there that are 95% built that way already.
Well, there's also several of the homes up there that are designed just like that. I mean, there's a mix, there's a mix. There's a lot of different. We have a lot of different, home styles up there. I think that's kind of the kind of unique nature of Morro Bay. I mean, we have a lot of different home styles, but you see ones that look just like that, and then you see other ones that are mass forward. I mean, you can, and you see them right next to one another.
And I think we're kind of plowing the same furrow here. Does anyone object to the when structurally feasible language for number five? No one objects. Okay. So let's move on to solar. Solar access. Hopefully a smoother discussion.
Okay, so solar access. So the city of Morro Bay encourages applicants to incorporate solar energy systems into their projects. Building placement and adjacencies should be considered such that they do not unreasonably affect solar access on neighboring properties. Solar panels and other roof-mounted equipment can detract from the appearance of a home and appear obtrusive if not integrated into the design. The following policies should be considered when designing a solar system and when siting a home or addition. We have, seven sub-policies. Say the first one is align solar panel faces with that of the underlying roof slope. Avoid panels with slopes that are different than that of the roof. Integrate the design of the panels into the design of the roof. Avoid a tacked-on appearance. Locate roof-mounted solar equipment and panels below ridge lines and on sides of roofs, away from street views wherever possible. Non-glare and non-reflective type panels should be utilized where possible. The design and placement of roof-mounted solar panels should account for heights of existing trees and future growth. This applies to both trees on-site and on neighboring properties. Orient the massing of the home and roof forms away from the side yards of neighbors as much as possible to minimize blocking their solar access. On flat roofs, set solar back from the edge to reduce visibility. Siting of new homes and additions should avoid shading existing solar systems and should take into consideration potential shading issues related to future solar installations on neighboring properties. Comments?
Because the only thing I'd say from a technical point of view is that the power generation solar is one thing, and then the hot water generation solar is something else. The hot water generation actually depends very specifically on orientation. The solar for power has a lot of flexibility that you can use. So I don't see that many projects get the solar hot water around here. I don't know if it's how feasible it is given how much fog we tend to have.
I never see applications for those.
Yeah. But so if it's primarily seen as electric power generation, I think these are probably fine. And multiple orientations. Mine face west, and they do fine. They don't face south. And they, at the time, the consultant thought that might actually be better here because we tend to have foggier mornings and brighter afternoons. So if your maximum gain is in the afternoon, west is not as bad, not so bad. So I think these seem reasonable. They don't address, we don't have that many larger lots where we'd have yard-based ones, but that's a different look entirely.
Yeah.
You know, if we want to play with our, if we want to beat out the hillside lot again, some of those that actually may be the upper part of the hillside that's maybe less developable for the house might actually be a better place to put some of the solar than the, so you could have theoretically ground-based solar panels somewhere. I don't know if we even worry about that yet.
Yeah, we only have a few in town that I've seen. I mean, I certainly haven't had any applications for them since I've gotten here. They're all roof mount. I mean, we have small lots for the most part, though. It's not surprising.
The consideration I have on this is that the new CalGreen is going to be giving you a lot of
points for hot water generation. And it's going to, you know, they're going to get, it's going to be a major component of most construction coming forward. So the only thing is you've got usually latitude plus 10 for hot water generation. So you're looking at a 45 degree slope, and a 4 and 12 pitch is an 18.43 degree slope. So you're going to have panels sitting up over the roof slope for that. So I don't know how we would accommodate that in here. And those have to face south.
My prediction, my crystal ball hat, is eventually we will see a lot more flat roof structures here that will take into account the rooftop deck and will take into account the ability to manipulate all these systems. And it'll look different. Because these changes coming are the square footage is going to be more expensive to build, so it's going to be more limited and it'll be more strategically placed, I think. And that's just my prophecy. It'll be on top of a flat roof is what I'm getting at.
So, Commissioner Lohr, was there, what policy were you looking at thinking that it wouldn't work specifically?
Align the solar panel faces with that of the underlying roof slope. The roof slopes are going to be 30 degrees different. You know, so that creates a problem there. You know, unless everybody goes to a 12 and 12 pitch.
We could say that these affect electric generation. And we could either kick the can or we could... I'm just saying these seem to fit really well for electric.
Yeah, they fit fine for electric.
Maybe we come up with a second system for the hot water.
And we could put it in in the last sentence of the preamble. We could note that it's for electric generation, and then so then we don't run into a conflict there or try to apply these policies. I mean, again, even were they to come forward, they have a necessity to be constructed a certain way, we'd be letting them do it. So, and we're basically mandated to. So. But, I mean, it doesn't hurt to have them so that no one gets confused by this. I'm like, hey, why did you put that on that house? Well, it doesn't apply.
Yeah. Maybe have just a statement about thermal systems. You know, may need more latitude.
And different, you know.
Actually, need more angle, but...
It seems to me that this is only going in one direction. This only talks about making the solar panels consistent with the design of the house. If you're planning a new property, it seems to me it should almost go the other way. In other words, you should design your roof so that it is consistent with electric and so. You see what I'm saying? This almost presupposes that you're adding solar to a house that's already built. But if you're building a house, then you have the ability to make part of the roof have a 45-degree pitch so that it will be consistent with solar water, to make, you know, the planes of the roof face in a direction that's most efficient. So it seems to me we need some language going in that direction as well.
You're talking like an architect.
Yeah.
Wash my mouth out with soap when I get up.
You know, in that same vein, too, is to minimize roof penetrations on south and west facing
you know, roofs, so that you can, you've got this expanse to put your systems up there.
That's actually a good thing to add in here. Yeah. Meaning, don't put vents and things like that are on your roof that would be in the way on that side. Put them on the other side of the roof.
Right. Yeah.
I believe in the memo that we sent to the City Council on solar, we did address that, Scott, so you may want to pull that and be able to pull some information out of it, both for electrical and thermal.
Yeah, I'd almost like to see this, the points, Scott, divided up into two groups. One having to do with, if you're building a house, this is what you should be thinking, or adding to a house, this is what you should be thinking of. And then number two, if you're adding solar to an existing house, this is what you should be thinking of, which is pretty much what you've got here. Because the penetration thing, really, that's part of designing a new construction. You know what I'm saying? The roof slopes, that's part of designing new construction. See, it seems to me we kind of need to do it in two parts.
Okay. So what do you want me to put in there? For the other part, I mean, so the one point about the roof penetrations is a good one. That would work for new construction or additions. Probably doesn't really apply so much to the existing one that we're putting solar on. So I can see where we could put that on there.
You know, that, and then also, you know, the run conduit so we can...
To pre-plumb?
Yeah.
For new homes?
Yeah.
And if conduit and, I guess, plumbing, if water, solar water heater is going to be... Water heating is going to be a big thing.
Yeah. Jerry, have you seen anybody do a radiant floor system based off solar collection here?
For the collector?
Yeah.
Not here. Yeah. You know, there's collector systems that are run through through hydronic loops for, you know, under asphalt and stuff for pool heating, but you can't get the temperature to... The only thing it's really effective for is pool heating or maybe, you know, that's about all. It's really, you can't get a high enough temperature to do space heating or do water transfer.
That was because the scale of the panels would get radically larger if you actually were doing a hydronic floor system that was assisted by this, versus a hot water system for just the domestic hot water use.
There are flat panels and even focused panels, you know, for collectors, focused collectors that I have seen in this county that then run radiant floor heat, and that's pretty prevalent around. You've actually got evacuated tube collectors too that solve some of these problems about slope, but most of those all of them are manufactured in China now, and the quality is questionable. But anyway, so there are solutions coming forward that would make it easier, but they do take, you know, larger area.
So I guess the concepts that we've got so far in terms of when planning new construction would be orient roof planes and pitch to accommodate future or to maximize the potential for future solar electric generation and solar water heating. Is that... minimize penetrations of south-facing and west-facing roof roof areas, and include appropriate pre-wiring and pre-piping for rooftop solar energy and water heating.
Thermal.
What he said, it's late. And
okay. I actually have several policies that have much of this stuff in, and I just kind of came up with a generalized one.
It's also okay. Good to let people know that these are future considerations so that when they design, they're aware that if there's a vacant lot or something near them, they can start to envision what types of things are going to be coming down the line. So they're more informed about what could be coming.
So are there any additional comments on the whole general design guideline issue? Catherine?
I'd like to thank Scott for all his hard work. It's done an admirable job keeping us in line and keeping us on point. So thank you.
Sure.
I think that we can agree on unanimously. Okay. This is time for public commissioner, planning commissioner comments. Are there any other comments, future agenda items?
I just wanted to ask Scott if there is any consideration about future meetings that might be canceled due to workload, or if we would be meeting the entire time the next few months.
That is a very good question. One of the things that the city council is looking at related to vacations and such is not looking at. They're canceling their second meeting in July. Not sure what you folks have as far as plans go, certainly the Planning Commission could do something similar. I have a pretty easy schedule as far as moving projects around right now. We don't have we have kind of a glut of projects that are sitting out there waiting for responses, so would not otherwise be ready. So pushing projects around a similar meeting date might be something that we could achieve if the commission was interested in that. And let me give you the date for that would be. If I can get to, July here. So where are we at? That's the 7th. 14th. 21st. Would be an option if you were interested in that or open for discussion.
Sure.
That'd be fine with me.
That'd be fine with me.
Oh, Scott, I'm going to cry if you cancel.
No.
Yeah, this has been so much fun.
I think Scott, basically we're all completely flexible in terms of, your staff needs and vacation time and that sort of thing. So,
well, I was also kind of putting it out. I mean, it's really for, you guys, if you wanted to do something then too, or have a bit of a break. We've had some pretty good meetings lately and we've been going kind of late. And so also doesn't hurt to give you a little bit of a break. And it's not a, like I said, we're in looking through it. We're right now, whereas before I was planned out several meetings, now we're not because we don't have stuff to go on the agenda. So moving stuff around is no big deal.
We also have the general plan kind of starting up.
We have the city council appointed the general plan, local coastal program advisory committee. And so that's going to start up, and we may have a upfront thing that we're going to do here in a little while. We're still working on what that might be. I think I am going on vacation at the end of this week for a couple of days, and then I'll be back Tuesday next week. And then probably by the end of next week, we're going to I think we'll be ready. We'll have all the everything back from all of the resource agencies for our grant agreements, so I can send out finally the RFP. We've been waiting on it because there are some fairly specific things in there that I need to let the consultants know that they need to do, and because they're going to need to track some of the stuff that's related to the grant funding that we have. So yeah, that's going to be, as soon as that goes out, then we're going to be ramping up because it'll be out for a month, and then we'll get the proposals back in, and the GPAC will be going through those. So as of right now, we're going to cancel the second meeting in July, and that's going to be the meeting on Tuesday the 21st. Okay?
Very good.
All right. Of July.
Any other comments from Planning Commission? Scott, did you have any other comments or additional issues?
No, I think, one thing. At the next meeting, we'll be bringing back the Embarcadero policy memo for the view linear
right.
view thing. So that's going to come back at the next meeting. I have the other request that you'd given me previously, and I haven't scheduled that yet.
I thought there were a couple of resolutions from the last meeting.
That's the one we're bringing back to the next meeting. And the other one was the I have it sitting on my sitting in front of my computer.
There was the view corridors.
It's the view corridor, and then why am I forgetting what the other one was? I haven't lost track of it. I have it. I just can't remember now. It's late.
Right. but we have two resolutions coming back.
You do,
yeah, okay.
But only one of them is coming to the next meeting based on staff time availability to bring it forward.
Okay. So we're doing them one at a time. All right. Very well. If there's nothing else, then we will adjourn the Planning Commission to our next regularly scheduled meeting here at the Veterans Memorial Hall on June 16th, 2015, and good night.